الإخوان المترجمين شبكة الاتصال واضحة؟ شكرا. بسم الله وعلى بركة الله، نبدأ يومنا الثاني من لقائنا المبارك في هذه المدينة الجميلة لشبونة في البرتغال، وأعذرونا أن نعتذر عن غياب رئيس الجمعية لمغادرته لأسباب طارئة، والحديث موجه لكم أيها الزملاء والزميلات المحترمين والضيوف الكرام. فكرئيسا للجنة الثانية، اللجنة الاقتصادية والاجتماعية والبيئة، أرحب بكم جميعا في اجتماعنا في هذا اليوم الجميل في هذا البلد الجميل. وباسمكم وأشكر السيد سيرجو والإداريين العاملين معه على جهودهم التنظيمية والإدارية، لكن اسمحوا لي باسمكم جميعا أن نشكر دولة البرتغال على دعوتها لاجتماعنا هذا، وأخص طبعا مجلس النواب البرتغالي، والشكر موصول إلى رئيس المجلس سعادة السيد جيمي جاما، وعلى استضافته لنا مساء البارحة. وكذلك نشكر السيد جنكيرو صديقنا العزيز العامل معنا منذ بداية تأسيس الجمعية، وأقول للإخوان في البرتغال أهنئكم بجمال بلدكم وبطيب استقبالكم لضيوفكم. واسمحوا لي أيضا باسمكم أن أرحب بالوفد الليبي الذي حضر صباح هذا اليوم، فهم معنا، نرحب بهم جميعا. وبنفس الوقت نؤول كثيرا على مشاركة الزملاء من ليبيا في هذه الجمعية بشكل عام وفي لجنتنا بشكل خاص، فأهلا بكم الزملاء الكرام. قبل أن أبدأ الحديث عن منجزات اللجنة الثانية، أطلب من الزميل جانكيرو أن لديه بعض الملاحظات ليختتم ما بدأ به يوم أمس، فأرجو من السيد جانكيرو أن يتفضل باستكمال ما بدأه يوم أمس حتى نبدأ رسميا بأعمال لجنتنا الثانية. شكرا.
Obrigado, Sr. Presidente. Bom dia a todos os colegas. Começo por agradecer a amabilidade das palavras do nosso Presidente e dizer-lhe que o nosso esforço está apenas para responder à gentileza e ao interesse com que temos sido recebidos em todos os países que fazem parte da APM. Como sabem, ontem houve uma pequena reunião de trabalho para conseguir um texto consensual. Isso foi tratado pelos colegas Mohamed, Rubissal, Sandokar, Jorge Vela e Suleiman e chegaram a uma redação final e, portanto, eu pedia ao Sr. Presidente que desse a palavra ao colega Jorge Vela para ler esse projeto de resolução, de relatório. Ok.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. As you correctly said, yesterday we presented the report on the visit to the Middle East, and as there were some expressed divergences on the resolution, it was decided that a small group meet to try and iron out the difficulties. It was made up of Suleiman Gleimat, it was Mr. Sanduka, there was Rudi Sal himself and some colleagues from the Jordanian delegation and myself. And as it turned out, there were more, there weren't any radical differences on the text. It was all a question of verbal amendments, which could possibly have creeped in even because of the translation facilities. I don't think we have to read the whole of the resolution, Mr. Chairman, with your permission, and I think we can go straight to the conclusions so that we won't take too much time of this meeting. Obviously, if anybody, I assume everybody has got a copy of it, if anybody has got any difficulties or any clarifications that one thinks should be made, then I'll be more than ready to answer. So after the recitals, we come to the conclusions part, and it goes like this. The Parliamentary Assembly of the Mediterranean agrees.
George Villa, إذا سمحت أحترم الاقتراح الذي تقدمت به حيث طلبت عدم قراءة تفاصيل القرار والتركيز على النقاط الرئيسية لكن لدينا لا علينا أن نأخذ موافقة الجميع فهل توافقون على عدم القراءة التفصيلية ونأخذ بالنقاط الرئيسية التي تم تعديلها أو ما اتفق عليه واضح أن الموافقة حاصلة فلك هذا بعد أن أستمع إلى السيدة الكريمة من الوفد الفرنسي وباختصار إذا سمحت
Merci, monsieur. France. Merci, monsieur le président. Il y a visiblement une coquille dans la traduction en français. La traduction anglaise est bonne. À l'alinéa 15, préoccupé par le caractère très restrictif des conditions auxquelles le nouveau gouvernement subordonne une solution à deux États, et c'est écrit « et l'arrêt de la politique de colonisation ». Nous sommes préoccupés par le fait que le gouvernement israélien est réticent à arrêter la politique de colonisation. Donc il faut rajouter « et par sa réticence à arrêter la politique de colonisation ». Il y a deux mots qui manquent. Dans la version française, la version anglaise est bonne. C'est bon ?
شكرا أرجو من الأخوة المعنيين أن يصححوا ما جاء في الترجمة الفرنسية شكرا تفضل جورج ويلا إذا سمحت
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I think our French colleague is correct because even the English version should read like this. Concerned with the restrictive character of the conditions to which the Israeli government is subordinating a two-state solution and by its reluctance to stopping its settlement policy in the Palestinian occupied territories. I think she's correct because that was missing. Thank you very much. Thank you. So the conclusions were these. The Parliamentary Assembly of the Mediterranean agrees to continue with its commitment to strive towards an early equitable solution to the Israeli-Palestinian issue based on the principle of the two-state solution. With Israel and Palestine as two sovereign states, living at peace with each other and with neighboring countries insecure and agreed borders. Reach out to all actors engaged in the search for peace in the region, legislative and executive bodies, civil society, regional and international organizations, to bring added value to and complement other international initiatives at civil, parliamentary and political level. Strive to find ways and means of supporting inter-Palestinian dialogue, which would be conducive to the formation of a Palestinian government of national unity. Work towards ensuring that besides food and medicines, basic construction materials and funds enter Gaza in order to rebuild critical social and economic infrastructure. Campaign incessantly in international fora for the opening up of Gaza borders and the dismantling of the wall of separation in Palestinian occupied territories. Encourage Israeli and Palestinian civil society organizations and NGOs committed to peace in the region to coordinate their efforts and exert democratic pressure on decision makers in their respective countries. Encourage the members of the quartet to use all democratic means at their disposal to ensure that political commitments entered into by the parties concerned are respected and built upon and not discarded. Support the convening of an international colloquy on the present and future status of Jerusalem. Appreciate the work carried out by the Ad Hoc Committee on the Middle East and encourage continued endeavors in search of peace with the participation of all parties concerned. Remain seized of the matter and request the PAM Ad Hoc Committee on the Middle East to keep the Bureau and the Assembly abreast of all relevant developments on the issue. And finally, send a copy of this report of the fact-finding mission and of this resolution to key political players and international organizations engaged in the quest for peace in the Middle East. That is the these are the conclusions of the resolution. If there are any problems with that, I'll be ready to answer. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Bom, não havendo, eu penso que não há nenhum problema, não sei se alguém quer manifestar, fazer alguma observação. Sr. Cuba e Sr. Sanduca.
سيد قبعة.
قم لك
رجل. سيد قبعة.
قبعة الخير.
صباح النور.
يعني لا شك انه تشكر اللجنة على جهودها. انا عندي ملاحظة عامة قبل ما ادخل في التفاصيل. الملاحظة العامة في روحية عند اخواننا وزملائنا انه بمعنى التوازن بين فلسطين واسرائيل. وهذا بدل لما تقرأ كل النص كأنه في حساسية توازن. وحتى بعض مرات لمصلحة اسرائيل وهلا بجيب امثلة. وبنغفل يعني موضوع المعتدي والضحية. وبنغيب الفاعل اما شيء يتعلق بالشعب الفلسطيني والقضيه الفلسطينيه. انا برجوكم يا شركائنا الاوروبيين بصوره خاصه تكونوا عادلين على الاقل لمره واحده بالنسبه للقضيه الفلسطينيه. نحن الشعب الوحيد في العالم الذي تمارس ضده الاعتداءات المستمره مع والمذابح المستمرة والعدوانات المستمرة أمام نظر وشعوب العالم أجمع وكأنها مسلسل تلفزيوني شهير. أنا ما بدي أناشد ضمير كل واحد منكم لو اللي بجرى في غزة أو العدوان أو الاحتلال في فلسطين جرى في بلده في أي منطقة أوروبية ما هو الموقف. لكن هذه المناشدة الظاهر صعبة لأنه في قوى كبرى تتحكم بسياسات. بندخل بالتفاصيل. أولا الفقرة الثانية تقول strongly condemned the Israeli military operations in Gaza. يعني الأوبريشن ما بعرف هي ميليتري ولا ميديكال ولا انقاذ اوبريشن. اللي جرى في غزة اقل ما يوصف العدوان الاسرائيلي على غزة. So it is aggression وليس operation. هذه الملاحظة الاولى. الشيء الثاني في نفس الفترة مكتوب which killed and injured thousands of civilians. مش معروف مين هم السيفيليان، محتمل اسرائيليين ايضا. هون يجب التحديد which killed and injured thousands of Palestinian civilians. باكد Palestinian civilians. الفقرة الرابعة بتقول strongly condemned the launching of rockets by Hamas militias into southern Israel. يعني هذه الصواريخ البدائية بتقارنوها في القنابل الفسفور الأبيض. ما بعرف وين العدالة. على الأقل ونقول and the daily Israeli raids on Gaza. لأنه لحد اليوم في غارات جوية إسرائيلية يوميا على غزة وتقتل الناس في هذا الجانب. إذا هذا بدكم يعني على الأقل تكونوا متوازنين. أنا بشوف الصياغة تميل لمصلحة إسرائيل في هذا البيت. أيضا الفكرة ما قبل الأخيرة واحد اثنتين ثلاثة أربعة خمسة ستة سبعة ثمانية التاسعة. أنا في نهايتها بضيف and to respect يعني أو آسف وتحترم قرار المحكمة الدولية بخصوص الجدار بمعنى إزالته والتعويض. هذه محكمة العدل الدولية بالنسبة للجدار نذكر قرار المحكمة الدولية وضرورة احترامه. لاحظوا الفقرة اللي بعدها condemning acts of violence committed against the Israeli civilians of at all times. فقط نستنكر العدوى إسرائيل على المدنيين الإسرائيليين. طيب انتوا بدكم توازن وانا ضد التوازن. انا مع نسمي المجرم الحقيقي بس هون مفروض اذا بدنا كوندم الاسرائيلي سيفيليانز نقول كوميتد اجينست ذا فلسطينيان اند اسرائيلي سيفيليانز ات اول تايمز. هذه مش عداله يا سيد الرئيس. الم ترتكب جرائم ضد الشعب الفلسطيني لعشرات السنين؟ ليش يعني القفز عن هذا الموضوع؟ ليش وين ما في يعني قتلى او شهداء فلسطينيين نقفز عنه؟ سؤال. شكرا. بالنهاية سيد الرئيس انا بعرف انه هذا يعني ليس له ممكن قيمة تاريخية بمعنى انه الامم المتحدة ستعتمد واسرائيل ستحترمه. قيمة هذا البيان انه تفكيك لشعوبنا وايجاد حل عادل للشعب الفلسطيني. وانا طالبت امبارح قلت يا عم احنا مستعدين دولة فلسطينية واحدة بغض النظر عن يهود عن الدين او الجنس او اللون او العرق وبغض النظر انه في استيطان ولا في عرب 48 بهدف واحد بس ديمقراطية. احنا نريد السلام ولكن نحن لا نريد الاستسلام. شكرا.
Good moment. Jordanian.
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. شكرا السيد الرئيس. أعفاني حديث الأستاذ أبو فارس تيسير قبعة. كنت أود أن أتحدث عن ما ورد في الجدار العازل لكن عفاني من الحديث. وأود أن أنوه هنا إلى الإضاءة الديمقراطية التي اتبعها السيد سليمان غنيمان وهو العودة إلى الهيئة العامة في استشارتهم عن إمكانية قراءة النص كاملا أم التعديل. وتمنيت لو عاد السيد رئيس الجمعية إلى الهيئة العامة بقرار اتخذ يوم أمس حول الترشح لجائزة الجمعية علما بأنني عندما عدت إلى جدول أعمال يوم الأربعاء لم أجد مفردة تتحدث عن الجائزة، وإنما هي يوم 26/6 أي يوم الجمعة أي يوم غد. لذلك لابد من العودة إلى الهيئة العامة في تقرير منح جوائز الجمعية. شكرا. بارح متفقين على منح الجائزة، والجائزة تاريخها بكرة.
شكرا.
تونيزي
شكرا سيد الرئيس. أقدم الشكر للسيد فيلا ولكل من ساهم في إعداد هذه الورقة التي تعنينا جميعا. غير أن هذه القضية أود بالمناسبة باعتبار أهميتها وتتطلب في الحقيقة وقت طويل للنقاش، ولكن أردت أن أضيف شيئا آخر بالنسبة للجمعية البرلمانية المتوسطية، باعتبار أن هناك معطى جديد بالنسبة للقضية. المعطى الجديد في هذه القضية هو تغيير السلطة الأمريكية. عندما أصبح أوباما على رأس السلطة الأمريكية هناك فعلا بوادر انفراج، وهذه بوادر الانفراج يجب أن تغتنم الجمعية البرلمانية المتوسطية هذه المعطيات، ومن دورنا جميعا أن ننوه بذلك وأن نتقدم حتى بالتهنئة إلى السيد أوباما، ولما لا تكريم السيد أوباما ونعطيه الثقة الكبيرة، لأنه أعرف جميعا كلنا نعرف أن التعنت الإسرائيلي إن كان معنى تعنت كبير اللي حدث سابقا كان بإعاز من السلطة الأمريكية السابقة. لذا أنا أرى أننا صحيح مطالبون باعتماد كل الوسائل لتحسيس كل الأطراف بأهمية السلام في الشرق الأوسط بما في ذلك الدبلوماسية البرلمانية، هذا ما تقوم به تونس، ولكن غير أن تعنت الكيان الإسرائيلي ورفضه لكل مبادرات السلام ليس من حل إلا الضغط الأمريكي. أنا أقول الضغط الأمريكي على الحكومة الإسرائيلية، ويجب أن نغتنم هذه الفرصة نحن في الجمعية البرلمانية الأمريكية لمزيد تحمل مسؤولية السيد أوباما. وأعتقد أنه عندما يعرف أن الجمعية البرلمانية المتوسطية هي مع أوباما، أنا أعتقد أنه سيقوم بضغط إضافي على الكيان الإسرائيلي وفض هذا المشكل المزمن، ولا يجب أن يقع يعني تمييع هذه القضية. مع الشكر.
I give the word to the Ms. Papadimitriou. And after to George Vela.
First of all, I would like to apologize for not being here yesterday. Unfortunately, I had to be at the Council of Europe. But the Greek delegation, we have, with very much care and love, worked on this resolution, and we thank the rapporteur, Mr. Vella, for having accepted our amendments. I ask the floor only to congratulate our colleague, Mr. Vella, for the wonderful work he has done reporting on the fact-finding mission. And I ask the floor, especially after I heard my dear friend, Mr. Kuba, who has all the reasons in the world and all the rights in the world to be demanding from all of us for the Palestinian affair. But we do have to communicate with the same language. a fact-finding trip's report has to be just like George Weller's reported, stark naked from feeling and also deprived from comparative references to what one knows from other interventions or through other compiled knowledge. The work is amazing. It's absolutely true to what we went through, to what we lived, to what we saw, to what we heard. Of course, if we had the possibility to express feelings, I would write 7 pages for how I felt walking out of the president of the Knesset's office. But this is not an important fact-finding trip. So there is great room, brother Mr. Kubar and all of us, to make an addendum in this report, which I plan to do for the case of Jerusalem, which I think is the worst thing I saw and the worst I found about, speaking of what I'm afraid will happen from now on to Jerusalem, which is definitely not only a Jewish city, it's a universal city in which my Greek Orthodox heritage and the cultural heritage of my ancestors before Christ and Muhammad and God knows whom were born around the world took place. You know that the Israelis are fully destroying Hellenistic ruins, which I'm sure UNESCO should interfere about. At least we have to. So I think and I propose that we could make an addendum, dear George, to your excellent report, adding each delegation, or all of us together, more than we saw, the way we grasped things, the way we want to interfere on things from now on, and let this addendum also circulate along with the report. Thank you. And bravo, George.
Muito obrigado. Por favor. Representante da Jordânia, Ramaud.
شكرا للسيدة بابا ديمتريو وأحمد الله على سلامتها إذ عادت إلى الصف من جديد بنشاطها. لكن أرجو أن أذكر أختنا العزيزة أن القدس مدينة عربية وليست ميراث لكل الشعوب. فإذا احتج اليهود أنهم سكنوها قبل 4000 عام، إذن سأنادي أجدادي الذين عاشوا في البرتغال لمدة 800 عام لنعود إلى البرتغال ثانية. شكرا. 800 سنة عشنا بإسبانيا وطلعنا.
Bom, eu, depois de ouvir estas intervenções, eu penso que há aqui uma sugestão concreta da nossa colega Papa Dimitriou para ultrapassar este problema. Eu acho que o Sr. Jorge Vela pode fazer uma sugestão para uma redação final e também gostaria de lembrar que é absolutamente impossível, num documento como este, ser, digamos, exaustivo, considerar todas as situações, nunca mais daqui sairíamos porque nunca haveria um documento perfeito. Isso é absolutamente impossível. Agora, o que eu creio é que este documento é um documento muito forte e que expõe publicamente aquilo que se está a passar e que exige publicamente uma reação forte e que toda a gente reconhece aquilo que tem sido o sofrimento infindável do povo palestiniano. E acho que quando falamos em operações militares na Palestina, estamos a dizer agressões, na Palestina, quando infelizmente falamos de mortos dessas agressões, são mortos palestinianos. Isso está no texto. De qualquer forma, que fique isso muito claro, um texto perfeito é impossível. Este nasceu da vossa reunião ontem, mas eu creio que com esta sugestão podemos ir ao encontro daquilo que agora nos é proposto pelo Sucuba e pelas intervenções dos outros colegas, nomeadamente a marcação do papel de uma nova administração americana neste contexto. Sr. Jorge Fel, dá-me então a palavra para poder fazer uma sugestão final.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I would like to start by thanking Elsa and subscribing completely and fully to what she was saying. However, one has to realize that we went on a fact-finding mission and we reported facts. We had to be objective. If we are to analyze, as Elsa rightly remarked, what we saw, not only heard, even the body language, even the way things were said, even the way we were treated, then there are volumes to be written. And I don't think we can ever, ever come out with a text in front of an assembly which would please everybody, because that would mean volumes. Even though I subscribe to the idea of having an addendum where we can put down our subjective assessment of what we went through and what we were subjected to. Now, let me deal with the remarks of my colleagues. Let me start with the colleague from Tunisia. Dear brother, if you look at the second page on the 11th indent in the recitals before the conclusions, there is express reference to the new administration of Obama. And we're saying there, expressing fervent hope in the leading role the American administration under the leadership of President Barack Obama can play in resolving the Israeli-Palestinian conflict and improving relations between the United States and the Muslim Arab world. I mean, it was a pertinent remark, but it's already included, and I hope that satisfies you. Our colleague from Jordan, I don't see, with all sincerity, I don't know where the prize for PAM comes in. It's another item which we discussed yesterday, and we'll have ample opportunity to discuss tomorrow as to whom or where, what we think about this prize, but I don't think it comes into the ad hoc mission. Now, coming to my dearest friend, Mr. Kuba. Mr. Kuba, you know my feelings for the Palestinian cause. Were it not for that, I would never, ever have been involved in this issue for the last practically 27, 30 years. I fully understand the situation. I fully sympathize with the cause. We've had ample time discussing personally. And your colleague, Mr. Sanduka, was yesterday with us to try and come to some sort of agreement on the text. It's always difficult. In all meetings I've been on the Israel-Palestinian issue, it being such a complex, such a multifaceted issue, nobody can ever come out with a text which pleases everybody and justifies all sentiments about the whole issue. We tried our level best. And I think we came to an agreement about conclusions which to me sound balanced and fair. I'm saying balanced because in all brotherly love, I tell you, I don't see why you're saying we'll have to be just and fair. We try to be, and I think we are just and fair in the resolutions. And also, there is no way that we're picturing or not making any distinction between the attacker and the victim. We are repeatedly pointing out what the Palestinians are undergoing and what they are suffering. And obviously, we have to mention also the other side. For me, to be objective and clinical, even if there is one civilian Israeli death on the other side, I have to condemn that as well. That doesn't mean that it equates with the thousands of Palestinian civilian deaths on the other side. But we have to mention, even one single death is to be condemned. And I fully agree with you when you say in recital 2 that we have to say that not only injured thousands of civilians, injured thousands of Palestinian civilians. That is something I can take up, and I agree with you. We can introduce that. Similarly, even in number 10, when we said condemning acts of violence committed against the Israeli civilians at all times, why not? We can say against the Israeli and Palestinian civilians at all times. I take that up as well. That's correct. However, there is definitely no shift in favor of Israel. I don't see why we should not, whether the rockets are primitive or not. I think to be balanced and to be credible, we have to say this is bad as well. And I don't think, in all honesty, it's doing the Palestinians any justice. Because it's an excuse for the other side to have an excessive retaliation for a small single thing, and then you come back with, you know, the latest military equipment. As regards the wall of separation in item 9, in the meeting yesterday, Mr. Sanduka can bear me out, we were thinking in terms of putting a reference to the UN resolution which speaks specifically about the condemnation and the wish to dismantle the wall of separation. I have no problems with including a reference to the relevant UN resolution. I think these were the biggest, which, as you see, colleagues, it's not a difference in principle. We're toying with words, we're toying with sensitivities, we're toying with trying to find the best balance. But finding real balance, it only belongs to God, not to us. It's very difficult to find it. And I think we've done our level best. Besides that, I can also, and I end on this note, while thanking everybody for, you know, going through the report and the resolution, let me remind everyone that between now and the General Assembly, this is a draft resolution which is being adopted by the committee today, but there is nothing to exclude amendments being suggested, so that when we come to the General Assembly, we could possibly include them if they are of substance, and there will be changes, because between now and October, God knows what will happen. Things are changing every day. Let's hope they change for the better, but we'll be in a position, and I'm sure that this committee will give me the faculty and the possibility to update the resolution and the conclusions to the time when we come to the General Assembly in October. Thank you very much.
Bom, eu, Sr. Cuba.
سيد الرئيس، يعني نحن أمس عندما استعرضنا التقرير قدمنا شكر جزيل للبام وللوفد وللصديق العزيز جورج فيلا على جهود التقرير، وبالتالي التقرير لم نناقشه صباح هذا اليوم. نحن نناقش شيء ليس له علاقة بالزيارة، بنناقش مشروع قرار حول الشرق الأوسط، ملوش علاقة بالزيارة. سواء جرت الزيارة أم لم تجري الزيارة، سنكون أمام يعني مشروع قرار. هذا أول شيء. الثاني، لا بالفعل أنا بهمني إنه الحقيقة تذكر، خاصة لبرلمانيين وشعوب تنتخبنا وتنتظر شو نتائج عملنا. أنا ما بقدر لحد الآن أسمي اللي جرى في غزة operations، أنا بسميها aggression، وهذه أنا بصر يعني عليها، وسأناقش هنا وفي اسطنبول وما بعد اسطنبول في هذا الموضوع. أيضا أما نقول قبل هو موضوع فلسطين عند إسرائيلي سيفيليانز قبل، أما نقول صواريخ حماس، أنا بدي أقول عند الإسرائيلي ريدز، العدوانات الجوية الإسرائيلية من F-15 اللي يوميا بتقدم دمار وقتل وإلى آخره مقابل صواريخ حماس. حتى أكون متوازن، طالما تطلبوا التوازن، أنا ما بطلب التوازن، أنا بطلب نشخص المجرم وندينه لكن طالما التوازن مقابل صواريخ حماس، في يا صديقي يا جورج ميلا، في طيران يومي F-16 بضرب في غزة في هذا الجانب. فأيضا موضوع قرار محكمة دولية بالنسبة للجدار، أنا ما بطالب بقرار العودة، حق العودة 194، أنا بطالب بقرار محكمة العدل الدولية واللي وافقت عليه الأمم المتحدة، وهو ضرورة إزالة الجدار. وإذا بدهم يبنوا الجدار يبنوه في مناطقهم، مش عندنا في الضفة الغربية والمناطق المحتلة، على الأقل حتى يكون موضوعي اللي بنحكي فيه. أنا بطالب تعديله بهذه الأشياء، إذا ما جرت بالفعل أنا مع جورج بيلا أمامنا أشهر للنضال، وطالما عدنا 60 سنة بنتعرض للقتل والتدمير من قبل إسرائيل، بنناضل معكم 2 و3 و4 حتى بالفعل يجي التوازن اللي بيسموه توازن.
Muito obrigado. Eu pedi ao colega Jorge Vela para poder fazer
just a small comment, Mr. Chairman. I take up what Mr. Kuba is saying. If he's got any suggestions that we can consider to include in the eventual final draft of the resolution, I'll be more than glad to receive them from him, and they will consider them. Thank you very much.
Shukran.
Bom, neste contexto, o que é preciso saber é se há uma redação concreta a propor ao Sr. Jorge Vela para poder integrar no relatório final. E se existe, deve ser feita.
Excuse me, Mr. Chairman. No, I cannot do it on my own. What I'm suggesting is that Mr. Kuba sends his drafts, his suggested amendments, and then we'll pick them up when we come to General Conference. When we're dealing with the adoption of the resolution, we will say, I will, as a rapporteur, if I agree with what he will be suggesting, say that I think that this should be included in the final declaration. That makes it easier, smoother, and everybody will be happy with that. Thank you.
Bom, é exatamente isso. Ou seja, se houver redações concretas para apresentar ao Sr. Jorge Vela, elas devem ser apresentadas. Nós devemos aprovar esta resolução porque ela representa um trabalho de todos nós, sobretudo até um trabalho mais dedicado por um grupo que se preocupou em redigir o melhor possível e traduzir o melhor possível o maior número de ideias com total objetividade. E penso que o Sr. Vela tem o mandato desta Assembleia para poder atualizar daqui até à Assembleia Geral o que for necessário, nomeadamente a proposta de redação que, por exemplo, o Sr. Kuba lhe quiser sugerir para incluir. E nessa altura discutimos na Assembleia Geral. Como diz, e bem, o Sr. Kuba, nós temos mais uns meses para fazer isso e, portanto, é também um tempo de reflexão. E neste contexto, então eu propunha que o relatório, que a resolução, fosse então votada pela Assembleia com esta nuance de dizer ela será suscetível de evolução até à Assembleia Geral. Mas nós precisamos de aprovar este documento e, portanto, precisamos de votar.
مداخلتي ليس كرئيس على رئيس اللجنة الثانية، لكن سأعود لأعقب على نفس الموضوع الذي تحدث به رئيس اللجنة المحترم جنكيرو وما أبداه الزميل جورج بيلا وملاحظات أخونا الكبير تيسير قبعة. تعليمات الجمعية إن لم أكن مخطئا ونظامها الداخلي إن لم نقر التقرير في لقائنا هذا لا نستطيع أن نمرره إلى الاجتماع الرئيسي القادم. إن لم نقره هنا لا نستطيع أن نمرره إلى الاجتماع الرئيسي، فعلينا أن نتخذ قرارا إما أن نؤجل. إما أن نؤجل أو أن نتخذ قرارا بالموافقة اليوم حتى يستطيع القرار أن يدخل إلى الاجتماع الرئيسي القادم. فدعنا نأخذ بعض الوقت ونتحدث فيه. لي ملا هل تريد الحديث في الموضوع نفسه؟
Aquilo que eu disse, Sr. Presidente, foi exatamente isso que havia necessidade de aprovar o relatório. O que, isso foi o que, aquilo que eu disse de uma forma muito clara. O Sr. Jorge Vela acabou por dizer, mas na altura dele ser apresentado ao plenário na Assembleia Geral, poderemos considerar, digamos, outras sugestões que sejam feitas, porque a Assembleia Geral é soberana para poder decidir. Bom, mas para poder decidir é preciso que nós tenhamos este relatório aprovado e ele deve ser submetido à votação nesta nossa reunião. Senhor Amoroso.
Grazie. Grazie Presidente. Per quello che ci riguarda, noi riteniamo che la proposta di risoluzione, così come presentata dal signor Vella, sia una proposta giusta che racchiude e richiama un po' quello che è stato anche il senso di tutta la relazione svolta ieri dal signor Vella, in modo particolare come reso conto di quella che è stata la missione svolta dalla PM nella striscia di Gaza. Quindi io penso che per quello che ci riguarda la relazione va bene così, va approvata in questa stesura. È chiaro che questo non è un testo definitivo, ma fino a quando sarà poi sottoposta alla plenaria noi potremo, ognuno per suo conto, presentare delle proposte integrative, di variazione, e di questo ne discuteremo nella plenaria e verificheremo quella che sarà la risoluzione finale. Ma noi oggi abbiamo il dovere di approvare un testo che sia riassuntivo della relazione svolta ieri dal signor Vella per la missione in Gaza, che sia un po' la fotografia di quella che è stata l'attività svolta. Poi le considerazioni, le valutazioni, gli aggiustamenti, anche eventualmente le posizioni che ogni singolo paese vorrà assumere, faranno parte del dibattito e della proposta finale che sarà presentata in Assemblea. Grazie.
Signor Fedela, rappresentante da Argelia.
Shukran, Sayyid Rais. لابد علينا أن نكون فعاليين ومنهجيين. نقترح تمرير التقرير والمصادقة عليه عموما مع إدراج تحفظ صغير يسمح للوفد الفلسطيني أو لوفد آخر بتقديم شيء مكتوب تتم مناقشته قبل عقد الجمعية العامة ببعض الوقت، وبعد ذلك يمر الى الجمعية العامة للمصادقة عليه. شكرا سيد الرئيس.
مداخلة بسيطة لعلنا نصل الى حل. والحديث ارجو اخي تيسير قبعة، ارجو ان تكون معي انت وصندوق بما يتعلق بالفقرة الثانية. كنت اتحدث والامين العام حول كلمة intervention، military intervention بدلا من operation. Intervention it's almost between the aggression and the operation. Sorry أنا دخلت في الإنجليزية. كلمة أقوى من العمليات العسكرية، ولكنها أقل شحطة في المفهوم العسكري، أنا أتحدث كمفهوم عسكري، من كلمة aggression.
سيد الرئيس،
انا مجرد ملاحظة اضيها لعلنا نخرج.
اسمح لي.
تفضل.
سيد الرئيس، احنا اتفقنا انه الملاحظات اللي قدمت سيأخذها جورج بيلا ويعدلها، بالتالي احنا الان بنكرر التقرير مع التعديلات اللي بقبل فيها بيلا. اما اذا بتناقش نقطة نقطة عندي رد على كل نقطة. انترفينشن ولا اكريشن ولا هولوكوست عندي يعني اشياء كثيرة. والله يخليكم يعني خلينا
شكرا شكرا على على الرأي. والامر متروك الان اذا سمح لي السيد جون كيري اقترح نتخذ قرارا وننتهي من هذا الامر.
Nós temos de tomar uma decisão, Sr. Presidente. E eu, para antes de passarmos à sua prática, sugeria ao Sr. Colega Jorge Vela que fizesse uma última análise daquilo que acabou de ser dito. Sr. Jorge Vela, por favor.
Mr. Chairman, I hate to take more time of this meeting because we've lots of other things to do. There seems to be an agreement, on a general agreement, my Italian colleague, Mr. Cuba, everybody's agreeing that we should adopt the draft report and resolution today with the amendments that Mr. Cuba has mentioned. I have no problems with including Palestinian wherever there is civilians and Israelis. And also that between now and the General Assembly, everybody is free to put forward any suggestions for amendments which can be considered by myself as the rapporteur and then eventually agreed upon by the General Assembly. I think we should put it to the vote and proceed because we will have lots and lots of other things to do. Thank you.
Como havia sugerido há pouco, nós temos necessidade de votar. Penso que não haverá mais nenhum problema depois do que aqui falámos. E, portanto, se não houver nenhuma oposição, eu ponho à votação com estes considerandos esta resolução e pergunto se alguém vota contra, se alguém se abstém. Está aprovada nas condições e terminamos agora oficialmente a reunião da primeira comissão. Sr. Cuba, por favor.
فلسطين بصوت ممتنع على هذا المشروع القرار حتى تراه بالصيغة النهائية.
Muito bem, fica referido que há uma abstenção da Palestina. Sr. Presidente, da nossa parte da primeira comissão está tudo terminado, portanto acho que podemos começar a recomeçar os nossos trabalhos.
Shukran للزميل جنكيرو. لك كل الشكر على جهدك الطيب وعلى صبرك وعلى اهتمامك المستمر منذ أن عرفناك. قبل أن أبدأ باللجنة، طبعا هذا الوقت حقيقة ذهب من حساب نشاطات لجنتنا الثانية، لكن سأحاول قدر الاستطاعة أن أختصر من هنا أو من هناك، لكن ليس على حساب فعالية وأهمية ما سنتحدث به في هذا اليوم المبارك. لكن قبل أن أبدأ أرجو من الزملاء الكرام، من الحضور الكرام، من البرلمانيين المحترمين، زملائنا من كل المناطق المحيطة في البحر المتوسط، أن يتسع صدرنا لبعضنا البعض، وأرجو أن يبقى شعارنا الرئيسي الاحترام المتبادل بين أعضاء الوفود، لأن هذه أهمية بالدرجة الأولى أعطيها للكل. أنا كأردني من مجلس النواب الأردني أحترم الجميع، وليس لنا مشاكل مع أحد بقدر ما لا سمح الله الإساءة وتدخل في الشؤون الداخلية. إن صدر كلمة من هنا أو من هناك فأرجو أن لا تترجم أبدا على أنها ضد شخص معين، لأننا لا نشخصن الأمور بل نعومها دائما للمصلحة العامة. شكرا. ما يتعلق باللجنة الثانية، الاقتصادية والتعاون البيئي والاجتماعي والتي تشرفت برئاستها منذ نهاية العام الماضي، أعتقد أنها كانت فعالة هذا العام من خلال 4 مجموعات، مجموعات عمل خاص ولجان فرعية، إضافة إلى أن هنالك مقرر دائم للمياه. بالطبع أنه لدينا زملاء جدد وبعضنا يحتاج لبعض الوقت حتى يدخل في العمل الصحيح ويعرف المهام المطلوبة منا جميعا. أنا شخصيا أشعر بالارتياح لمنجزات اللجنة الثانية، بعد خاصة بعد أن ترأست اللجنة الأولى وهي السياسية في العام الماضي، وتشرفت بتسليم المهمة إلى زميلي جنكيرو من البرتغال، وعرفت حجم العلاقة الحقيقية بين نشاطات وفعاليات اللجنة السياسية وفعاليات ونشاطات اللجنة الاقتصادية. سياسة جيدة تخلق اقتصادا جيد، وإذا لم يكن هنالك اقتصاد فالسياسة ستتسمم. ستكون تواصي ومقترحات المقررين ومجموعات العمل وأعضاء الوفود المدعوين شهادة إن شاء الله على الدور الهام الذي تلعبه اللجنة الثانية في البام. وقبل البدء بمراجعة مخرجات العمل من قبل فرق العمل الخاصة والفرعية، وخاصة منذ الاجتماع الثالث للبام في موناكو في العام الماضي، فأنني أطلب منكم إن سمحتم تبني جدول أعمالنا لهذا اليوم. فهل نوافق على تبني جدول الأعمال الذي سنتحدث به؟ الزملاء الكرام، السكوت يعني الموافقة. شكرا. لجنتنا بدأ نشاطها هذا العام باجتماع عقد في قبرص في ليمسول، وهنا بهذه المناسبة رغم أنني لم أحضر هذا الاجتماع في ليمسول حيث كنت مشغولا باجتماع آخر في اسطنبول، اسمحوا لي أن أتقدم باسمكم بالشكر الجزيل إلى مجلس النواب القبرصي على استضافة اللجنة وعلى الحفاوة وحسن التنظيم الذي قدم للجمعية. في لقاء ليمسول بحثت مجموعة العمل الخاصة موضوع إدارة الأزمات الذي سبق وبحث في مالطا عام 2008 عندما تم اقتراح تشكيلها. بالطبع زميلنا السيد جنكيرو من البرتغال لاحقا سيقوم بإطلاعنا على التقرير والقرار المتعلق بإدارة الأزمات، شاكرين له طبعا اهتمامه وحاطته الموضوع بما يلزم البحث كمقرر. التغيير المناخي ايضا كان على جدول اعمال اللقاء في ليمسول، واعطي هذا الموضوع اهتماما خاصا لما له من اثر كبير على كل الدول في المنطقة وفي العالم. فريق العمل الخاص اعطى اولوية كبيرة لهذا الموضوع، مقرره سعادة السيدة بابا ديمترو من اليونان ركزت على مسألة الهجرة البيئية، ولاعتقادها الشديد أنه على الحكومات أن تكون حذرة جدا في هذا المجال وأن لا تتجاهل مواضيع البيئة، وهي بنفس الوقت تحاول أن تنقذ البنوك والشركات، فالبيئة برأيي ورأيها أهم من الأمر الآخر. أمر آخر، نحن نتجه ونترقب مؤتمر التغيير المناخي الذي سيعقد في كوبنهاجن، والذي كما أشار الأمين العام يوم أمس بمداخلة بسيطة أأمل أن يكون حضورنا في مؤتمر كوبنهاجن من خلال السيدة ديمترو أن يكون حضورنا مميز وفعال وهي كعادتها في جمعيتنا وفي غيرها، نظرا لطرحها لوجهات نظر بناءة و تساعد البرلمانيين من إيصال صوتهم حول هذا الموضوع الذي يؤثر على البشر باستمرار. الحديث جزئيا هنا موجه إلى سعادة الأمين العام الدكتور سيرجو، وأرجو أن يكون حضورنا من خلال المكتب الدائم في كوبنهاجن حضور مميز وفيه قوة لنري الآخرين بأننا في هذه المنطقة، منطقة البحر الأبيض المتوسط، من خلال جمعيتنا لنا دور ونستطيع أن نؤثر ونستطيع أن نسوق أنفسنا عقلانيا ومنطقيا وليس بالقوة العسكرية. موضوع آخر قررت لجنتنا متابعته وهو مصادر المياه وتوفرها، حيث كلف سعادة السيد السيناتور بلانك من فرنسا وكمقرر دائم بعد انتهاء عمل مجموعة العمل الخاصة حول تكاملية مصادر المياه. هنا يجدر بنا أن نذكر أسماء ضيوفنا المحترمين الذين كان لنا شرف الاستماع لهم كما ذكرت في قبرص في ليمسول، السيد مايكل جارود الأمين العام لمنظمة الأرصاد العالمية حدثنا حول المنظمة والتغير المناخي وأثره على أمن وسلامة البشر، السيد فابريزو جنتلوني مدير العلاقات الخارجية وإدارة التعبئة في منظمة الأوشا، وتحدث عن المنظمة في منطقة البحر المتوسط والتجاوب الإنساني اتجاه الكوارث الطبيعية، السيد ثيودولوس مسميرز من وزارة الزراعة في قبرص دائرة المصادر الطبيعية والبيئة قدم لنا مراجعة حول الموقف الأوروبي بعد اجتماع بوزنان والتحضير للقاء بون ومؤتمر كوبنهاجن القادم. طبعا إن أردت أن أدخل في التفاصيل ما قدمه الضيوف الكرام في قبرص فالأمر سيأخذ منا وقتا طويلا، لكنني أحاول قدر الاستطاعة أن ألخص بكلمات بسيطة ما قدموه لنا، مشكورين على جهدهم، ومشكورة إدارة الجمعية على استضافتهم بالتنسيق مع مجلس النواب القبرصي. كذلك السيد كريستوس كبركادوس مفوض الدفاع في قبرص تحدث حول طبيعة عمل ونشاطات الدفاع الوطني المدني. لقاؤنا في قبرص مكننا من إدامة علاقات جيدة أو بناء علاقات جيدة مع منظمة الباك PACE وهي الجمعية البرلمانية لمجلس أوروبا إن كانت ترجمتي صحيحة. مثلها سعادة السيد ألان ميالي النائب ورئيس لجنة الباك حول البيئة الزراعية والشؤون المحلية والإقليمية، شرح طبيعة عمل اللجنة في ذلك الوقت. سعادة السيد تينا أكتوفت نائب ومقرر لجنة الباك حول الهجرة اللاجئين والسكان والذي تحدث حول البيئة وعلاقتها بالمهاجرين، وأخيرا سعادة السيد جون بريسكوت رئيس الوفد البريطاني في الباك نائب رئيس وزراء بريطاني سابق ومفاوض الاتحاد الأوروبي إلى بروتوكول كيوتو وقد تحدث حول مؤتمر كوبنهاجن القادم. إن كنت مسرعا أرجو من الترجمة أن يشعروني بذلك لأبطئ، لكن ربما أكون مضطرا على حساب الوقت الذي ذهب لمناقشة أمور أخرى في هذا الصباح. اجتماع آخر عقدته لجنتنا في القاهرة قبل 3 شهور بضيافة مجلس الشعب المصري خصص لفريق العمل الخاص حول المشاريع الصغيرة والمتوسطة ومقررها سعادة رضا برجوب من تونس، وكذلك لجنة الطاقة حيث التي تم نقلها من هذا العام طبعا من اللجنة السياسية إلى اللجنة الاقتصادية وحيث متعلقة بمواضيع الطاقة. هنا وباسمكم جميعا أتوجه بالشكر أيضا إلى مجلس الشعب المصري وأخص بالذكر سعادة الزميل محمد أبو العينين الذي نفتقده في هذا اللقاء. زميلنا محمد أبو العينين فاعل ونشيط في الجمعية ودائما يقدم لنا مساعدات حقيقة كثيرة خاصة في موضوع زيارة فريق تقصي الحقائق الذي ذهب إلى القاهرة والعريش وغزة ثم عمان ورام الله استخدمنا طائرته الخاصة، وأعلمكم بأنه طيار آمن، يعني كنا مطمئنين على أرواحنا في رحلتنا معه إلى تلك المنطقة. هل سأعطي نبذة بسيطة حول المتحدثين الرئيسيين في لقاء القاهرة؟ كانوا السيد مايكل جونيت من فرنسا، رئيس منظمة أوكيور المالية وهي مجموعة بنوك توفير، ورئيس لجنة توجيه مجموعة البنوك المتوسطية، والذي أوجز حول مهمة مجموعة ائتلاف البنوك بما يتعلق بالمشاريع الصغيرة والمتوسطة. ثم تلاه سعادة الدكتور حافظ السلماوي من مصر، رئيس اللجنة الفرعية للمدرج حول الطاقة، وكذلك المدير العام لإجبترا، حيث قدم تقريرا حول سوق الطاقة على أثر الأزمة المالية التي يمر بها العالم. السيد جيمس راولي منسق الأمم المتحدة المقيم في القاهرة، والذي قدم لنا شرحا حول نشاطات برنامج الأمم المتحدة للتنمية في قطاع الطاقة في مصر. مندوب عن الصندوق الاجتماعي المصري قدم شرحا عن مهمة الصندوق في مجال المشاريع الصغيرة والمتوسطة، وكذلك ممثلا آخر عن وزير الطاقة والكهرباء المصري سعادة حسان يونس، الذي تحدث حول سياسة استخدام الطاقة والطاقة المتجددة. لأمانة المسؤولية أن لقاءنا في القاهرة أيضا كان موفقا جدا بالضيوف المتحدثين الذين تحدثوا لنا حول الطاقة والمشاريع الصغيرة والمتوسطة، كما كنا أيضا موفقين كما بلغني في التقرير من المؤتمر الذي عقد في ليمسول قبرص. قبل أن أنهي حديثي الآن، أحب أن أقدم شكري إلى المقررين ومساعدي المقررين في مجموعات العمل وكل البرلمانيين الذين شاركوا في اجتماعات اللجان في مختلف المناطق ذات العضوية في جمعيتنا البرلمانية المتوسطية. وقبل البدء بالملاحظات حول برنامجنا، أذكركم بأن جزءا من لقاءات يوم غد أيضا ستكون متعلقة باللجنة الاقتصادية لأمور حول الحضور والضيوف، وربما لم تستكمل هذا اليوم. وسنستمع لمحاضرة حول التجارة الإقليمية من ضيفنا المحترم السيد هورتا، ممثل وكالة التجارة الدولية في البرتغال، وكذلك سنستمع إلى السيد ليكورتير من اليو بي آي من فرنسا. استكمالا لما تم في قبرص حول إدارة الأزمات أو الكوارث، هذا الموضوع مدار اهتمامنا جميعا، ويسعدني أن أرحب وإياكم بضيفتنا المحترمة الآنسة مارغريتا والستروم، آنسة مارغريتا والستروم، مساعدة الأمين العام في الأمم المتحدة للاستراتيجية الدولية للتخفيف من الكوارث وأثرها. باسمكم جميعا أرحب بالآنسة مارغريتا وأدعوها إلى أن تحدثكم حول إدارة الكوارث، فلتتفضل مشكورة. تفضل يا سيدي.
Welcoming me here to your clearly very busy schedule. I am not going to talk to a PowerPoint, but I would just like you to watch a few images while I speak. Is it okay? More closely. The subject matter this morning that I'm going to speak to honorable members of this assembly and members of national parliaments is about risk and disasters. May I? I just reviewed, in fact, your draft resolution, The Road to Copenhagen, and I can see that we are already working in the same direction. I would like to introduce to you a bit the work that the International Strategy for Disaster Reduction is doing. It is also your organization. Disasters in this region are very familiar to all of you, different types of disasters. And I'm not so sure you have yet fully integrated the thinking around disasters into the long-term future issues that relate to the impact of climate change and other areas. This is a global concern. Wherever we go, we travel today, the anxiety level of people, of media, is very high, basically triggered by understanding of the future possible impact of climate issues. Over the past 30 years, a report that we have just issued, which is called Risk and Poverty in a Changing Climate, and this report has looked very carefully at data from 7,000 disasters over the past 30 years, and it's come out with some very clear, non-controversial evidence that disaster risk is increasing. The cost, the dollar, euro, the financial cost of disasters are going up. But there is one piece of good news. The mortality rate in disasters are going down because of the work that many of you do in disaster management, better preparedness, better action points. The way the international community, in its very largest perspective, had dealt with disasters and the understanding that disasters in fact undermine your own investments in development plans in the future, in the MDGs. First, UN set up the IDNDR, the International Risk, Natural Disaster Risk Decade. And then they set up the succession mechanism, which is the ISDR, the International Strategy for Disaster Risk Reduction. One of the key perspectives that very often is raised when I meet countries, people, is they say the main stumbling block for us to handle disaster impact more rationally is that in my country, in my culture, disasters are seen to be acts of God, not of man. Events that happen that you cannot plan for and that you cannot do very much about. I think this is behind us now. Of course, we understand that there are things we can do, that we must do. They are costly and complicated, sometimes politically very uncomfortable, but they can be done. And I think if we want to put it on what we are faced with, regrettably often, if we know that we don't have to face the grief and sorrow and pain that you see every time you've seen a major earthquake or major flooding, schools have been destroyed, hospitals destroyed, people's homes destroyed. If we can do something about that, of course, we will do it. And we can do something about it. There are also issues about cost, since this item comes under your Financing and Economic Committee. Every year, and this will increase, no doubt, the international community only, and this is a very small part of what countries pay for disasters, but on the average, $4 to $5 billion for the impact of natural disasters only on the response element, flooding, major earthquakes, and this does not bring in the enormous cost for reconstruction and rehabilitation. And this is a small part of what it costs. It costs your national governments enormous amounts of money. It costs individuals enormous amounts of money. I'll tell you that I once did an evaluation of a major earthquake disaster in a big Asian country. And the international community talked, of course, a lot about the cost. We actually looked at how much did the international aid contribute to it, compared to what the government invested, what the civil society, what the corporations gave, and it was approximately 4% of the overall cost of the immediate response. So that's the proportion I think we also need to keep in mind. Today, in as far as understanding of the disaster impact, I think we are in a very different situation from even in the year 2000 when ISDR was established. And for two reasons. The first reason was the tsunami. The tsunami completely triggered a new reaction for many reasons, because the huge scale of it, because the drama, because we were all very close to it, and because it impacted European countries. Countries that were at the other end of the world, and I don't think we've ever in modern times so strongly felt that disasters have no borders. The second thing that have triggered a change of our mindsets on disasters is precisely climate change. For the first time, I think we can understand that weather is more than weather, and climate is going to determine our long-term future and understanding of disasters. IPCC, in its fourth report, was very clear already on the trends and the impact of changing climate in terms of the geography of impact of disaster, the intensity and the frequency. And I'm very pleased that IPCC, in fact, has agreed to do a special report now on extreme events, which is precisely going to study climate and disasters and try to give some better long-term trends on how this is likely to play out. The tsunami also created what I would like to also bring to your knowledge today, the Yoga Framework for Action. We just gave you a photocopy of part of this. The Kobe conference in Japan had been planned for a year, but it took place 3 weeks after the tsunami. And it benefited from an incredible force of political will and engagement that created the very strong framework for action that the Yoga is. But it did not create national action plans. It created a broad international framework, which, if you look at it, speaks very clearly about what needs to be done to prevent and preempt what it can do. So what does it do, the Yoga Framework for Action? Well, it explains that, and I very quickly just highlight to you, if you look at this page, the first page, expected outcome, goals and priorities. In order to reduce the impact of disasters, you need to ensure that you got a national or local priorities, strong institutional basis. You need to identify, assess and monitor risk and enhance early warning systems. Use knowledge, education, science, improve scientific basis. Reduce the underlying factors for disaster risk. This is development investments. And finally, of course, you also need to have very good disaster response systems, because it will still happen. We cannot undo earthquakes, but we can move out of the harm's way. So the HFA is a guide for action also for the ISDR, which is us, but we are a very small entity. The big ISDR is countries, UN organization, civil society organizations, science organizations. Anyone who is engaged and concerned is a part of our big international system. In Kobe, 168 governments already participated. The framework was subsequently, of course, endorsed by the UN General Assembly. How do we work with a small coordination entity at the center of the UN? Well, we work with you. We work through regional organizations, Africa Union, the League of Arab States, we have a very strong relationship with. We work through the Organization of American States, ASEAN, etc., etc., and sub-regional organizations as appropriate. And many of them, when if you look closely, you will see that they already have policy guidance on what to do. They may not yet have action plans. They may not, in some cases, have resources, but they are certainly now focusing on these issues. We wanted to also highlight that the strength of the climate change understanding has led to something which is quite important also, I think, for our continued collaboration. It's the understanding that the tried and tested methods of work for over 30 years of disaster risk reduction community will be your immediately available and very efficient instrument for climate adaptation work. These are two communities that have to be brought together more firmly. I don't think we have time to reinvent the wheel of adaptation, use the instruments and the mechanisms that we already have. And luckily, in our collaboration and our sort of engagement with the negotiators, they have clearly taken this on board very well, which you can see in some of the background documents for the negotiations going on now. So what the Yoga Framework for Action tells us very simply is that disasters are, in essence, a development issue. It is not an issue for your disaster management organization only. Reducing the impact of hazards that cannot be prevented requires a central strategy, a strong policy direction and policy framework, coordination among institutions, national and international, and authority behind it. And it requires, of course, financial resources, but not always as much as we may envisage first round. Each sector in society is involved. This is not an issue. Many countries now have disaster management authorities. But how do we bring in the Ministry of Health, the Ministry of Agriculture, the meteorological services, the early warning systems? This is, in the best organized and richest countries, this is a major challenge to get it right, as it is in the international organizations. So we need to look at land use planning, agricultural areas for food security purposes, how roads and bridges are built and planned and how safe they are. Local communities know where we shouldn't build bridges, and yet we build the bridges in the wrong place and we have to keep rebuilding the bridges. We have to look at how social benefits are created and designed, and we have to look at, of course, how the private sector can be brought in as a partner, also because they do it pretty well and they also share the cost for what is not done well overall. It also means bringing in, and just refer to that since it is very topical now, risk management for public health emergencies such as pandemics. We recently had a discussion about this in our meeting in Geneva last week, and a very strong plea from people who had just worked with the swine flu pandemic. This must be an integral part of your national risk reduction planning and your disaster management planning. The framework also, and I think from your personal experience, you must also relate to the issue that without public education and awareness, we cannot move very fast, because we need to be with our authorities, we need to stand behind governments when they take tough decisions. And finally, as I already mentioned, it requires good disaster preparedness, because if people don't have anyone that helps them when they finally have a disaster, they will not trust our other interventions either. In Kobe, when we agreed on moving forward with the... Here we are. What we agreed was that ISDR should produce several things, but two big products. The first big product was a biannual meeting of all the stakeholders in disaster risk reduction. Who are the stakeholders? The stakeholders are... The stakeholders are governments, of course, the primary actors, and you will say that the Yoga Framework for Action very clearly underlines that governments must be in the lead, and without them we cannot do anything. So this pressure on governments here to be highly visible and proactive clearly comes out of a fora that was government-led. It also involves the international multilateral system. People like us, we also have an obligation to make sure that in our support and collaboration with governments, we together focus on the main priorities in disaster management, risk reduction, and now, as we say, the adaptation issues. It also involves civil society. Civil society, NGOs, what you call them, have grown a lot and become very conscious and aware and responsible, in fact, on these issues. And it also involves science. I firmly believe that it's very complicated for people like us to take informed and appropriate decisions if we don't have access to good, the best science that is available to us, and that it's been appropriately processed. I don't expect to have to read PhD dissertations, but that it's been processed, so it gives me options for decision making. I recall having had a conversation with the mayor of one of the big cities in Sweden, from where I come, and he said that he felt very lonely because he had been told to do a 50-year plan for his city due to the climate issues. And he had to make a choice between rerouting a river or not. And you can imagine the huge infrastructural consequences and the cost if he said, on the basis of his existing evidence, I need to move this river in another direction, which means moving the city, essentially. So that's the nature of decisions that people, public officials are asked to take on the political responsibility today. Finally, of course, we want media to work with us on this. We all want responsible, well-informed, educated media. We don't always have them, as we all know, but we are determined to work with enough of them to create a better understanding for how these issues work. So our global platform meets every 2 years. Last week we had the second meeting, and it brought together well over 1,800 people, and it had some extremely clear recommendations that I will share with you. They are the guidance in a way. They are not binding. This is not the UN conference. It's a multi-stakeholder forum. But these kinds of consensus building exercises, of course, provide some guidance to the focus of our work. And their first concern was, of course, climate. It was the issue of how do we make sure that the climate and disaster risk reduction communities work more closely together? How can we better integrate the national planning and international planning mechanisms? What do we do about financing? How do we avoid overlapping? And what do we do about knowledge and technical assistance issues? So they had some strong recommendations towards Copenhagen, exactly as you have said. The second main issue that they came out very strongly on was on financing overall for disaster risk reduction. They have some clear recommendations in terms of both national and international targets, but also a call from one of the countries that 30% of all the monies that are invested in adaptation also should be used for disaster risk reduction measures in the immediacy. They also wanted full global engagement in having safer schools and hospitals, because we've seen so much of that. So they propose that globally all schools and hospitals should be reviewed for structural safety in the next 2 years, and by 2015 we would have an action plan on safe schools and hospitals. This is not so idealistic as it sounds, because many countries are doing this already. They have already checked their schools. They have come up with some schools need to be torn down, others need to be fixed. So I think if there is a global consensus, this will be a target that really can be achieved. And finally, they also, of course, called for a deal in Copenhagen. That's very important. They called for a particularly important point for a multi-stakeholder forum like this, for more resources and more attention given to local level action, because that's precisely where things play out. We are quite good now at global policies and global direction, but we are not good enough at channeling resources to the local level. And the resources that are now coming online, and they are quite large resources already coming, we will certainly help to the degree we can influence how these resources reach the people that really make things happen, local authorities, mayors, and local communities. The second big delivery that we have, which will also become a biannual event, is the report on disaster risk reduction. So this is the first report that assesses global disaster risk. And I would like to, this is very large collaborative efforts among many organizations. It is not only ISDR. What it says, the report, and if you think about what you know about disasters, it's very simple, in fact. It shows that disaster risk is intensely concentrated. And the countries, in fact, that are most concentrated disaster risk are the countries with very large population living in very vulnerable areas, like China and India, and in fact Bangladesh also. It's pretty clear. It's, what is good is both China and India particularly are also very capable countries that have significant resources to put into mitigating risk. The second element of what the report highlights is that the risk is very unevenly distributed. A rich country like Japan, for this being affected by the same type of cyclone as Philippines, who they have largely the same type of impact of cyclones in a year. Yes, you can see the mortality ratio is 1 to 17. If one person dies in Japan, it's 17 in the Philippines, for the same strength of cyclone affecting the same area. Also, if you compare the economic impact of countries, they've done an analysis of compared between OECD and non-OECD countries. The ratio is 200 to 1 in terms of multiplier effect between poor and rich countries. Not terribly surprising either. It's also extensively spread, and this is something that is the main argument of this report. The big disasters that we are familiar with, we read about in the newspapers, the ones that are most costly in terms of economic losses, people's livelihoods, and countries' economy, are the ones that happen regularly, all the year around. The floods that happen 3 times a year in the same community, hundreds of thousands of houses lost. This is where costs are building up to countries. This is an image of Sri Lanka, where of course the intensely red is the big, very high evidence disasters, but you can see all the other areas that are also impacted by disasters. And this shows that socio-economic factors are the main drivers in how hazards become disasters. Small countries, highly vulnerable to disaster impact. These are the extremes, United States and America and India. There is not a blip on their GDP after disasters. But of course, small island states, Santa Lucia and Samoa in this case. But you will find the same impact clearly on many not such small and highly vulnerable countries. The fourth factor I have already mentioned, what increases fastest is economic losses. Why? Well, partly because we are wealthier, there is more to lose. As wealth grows in highly urbanized areas, our exposure increases and the cost increases. And with wealth comes also high insurance capacity. In poor countries, poor people have no insurance. They have no wealth against which they can get insurance schemes in the commercial sector. But mortality is going down because of better preparedness. So what you see here is the comparison between the mortality risk, which is going up somewhat, but the economic losses is going up much more. Exposure is going up very quickly. Exposure means that we live in highly urbanized areas, poor infrastructure, because so many people want to live in cities, sometimes because they really want to look for work and have no options, but also because urban life is the modern life. In Africa, well over 70% of population is still living in rural areas, but it's the most rapid urbanization is in fact now in Africa. Well, as you know, over 50% of the global population lives in cities already. And finally, climate in itself is a risk driver. How that plays out is about 85 to over 90% on the average every year of disasters are triggered by weather-related events, we call them. So tropical cyclones, flooding, and other things, 85 to over 90% water-related. Add to that too little water, drought-affected areas, long-term impact of disasters. So when doing the modeling that the team that has created this report have done, they clearly find an extremely strong risk driver for exposure and hazards in the climate change issues. The most vulnerable countries, of course, I think that is an obvious conclusion from what I've said, are the poorest. But every country is exposed today. And we have nearby countries that suffer terrible wildfires. You see them in Australia, you see them here, you see them in the United States. We see flooding in Europe ever so often. Our most beautiful river is flooding, and I'm not so sure we have a good plan for how to change that. In the work that we've been doing with the League of Arab States, they have the Academy has established a center for risk reduction in Cairo, and it's now beginning to collect evidence and data with all the countries to see how they can contribute to build awareness and also do something. But this is the poorest continent in the world that we see here on the map. In Africa, well over 70% of the population in sub-Saharan Africa is already living on less than under the poverty line. And the impact of them on floods, changing climate patterns, is already very significant. Maybe you've heard about Namibia, which, if you think Namibia, you think drought, you think no water. What has happened in the last few years is very dramatic flooding, which poses that government with a really strange choice of not really understanding what the future trends are going to be. Now, how do we deal with this? I wanted to show you this quick trend of how countries have done in implementing the Yoga Framework for Action, because, of course, it's your Yoga Framework for Action. And the main point I want to say is that we've done well on the, or you have done well on the institutional build-up. Policy frameworks are better, many institutional mechanisms, parliaments are also engaging. We're also doing well in Goal 5, which is building better disaster response mechanisms. We are not doing particularly well on public awareness and education. We have a lot more research and better science development to do. But the one thing that is the biggest difficulty in countries and in international organizations is the understanding of that this is a development issue and needs to be fully integrated into all aspects of how a society works. Every line ministry is responsible for their sectoral understanding. And it works, I should say, it works. It's the same pattern if it's a high-income, middle-income or low-income countries. The difference is, of course, the availability of your resources to address these things. So finally, what's going to happen from now? I wanted to mention, since this is the venue of parliamentarians, in your region you have obviously already started working on this area very, very determinedly, which we just heard the report of Chair, and you are preparing for Copenhagen and beyond on implementation. Since a couple of years in ISDR, we've also engaged with parliamentarians. Two major meetings and initiatives had taken place. One international one that was based out of Manila last year, which included international parliamentarians from Europe, from Americas, from Africa, and of course from Asia. That led to a second meeting of concerned parliamentarians in Nairobi, of African parliamentarians, which brought in representatives of West, Central, Southern and Eastern Africa. And in both cases, they have launched, of course, in their national parliament, briefings, engagement in the issues that relate to your legislative functions, also in lobbying. But they're also proposing now, and this is a particularly strong call from Africa, but also from Asia, is that they would like to meet among parliamentarians before COP15, before the Copenhagen meeting, to see what things hold them together? What are the common elements of action? What are the issues that they can be helpful with? So this is something that we have committed to help happen if we can and if that is the wish. There is an upcoming meeting in Latin America. It will probably happen in Costa Rica, I assume, on the invitation of Argentina and Costa Rica. What they have done is that they have particularly, of course, looked at what are the specific issues that we should address. And they are very much related to the climate change and risk reduction things bringing together. It's about financing. It's about national rules and legislation. It's looking at decentralization impact. And many of them are very engaged in public awareness campaigns as well. If you are familiar with UVC, that maybe in Africa the parliamentarians has just launched a campaign called Black on Green, which has as a purpose to raise awareness and help people to take decisions and understand what's happening in many countries. The other issue that maybe you would like to engage in is the cooperation and advocacy for safer schools and hospitals. The ISDR, we run 2-year campaigns, and we have just closing the campaign on safe hospitals, which will now be led by WHO in the future. But this autumn, for the next 2 years, we will initiate the campaign on urban risk to understand better and work with mayors and local authorities of cities around the world to bring their issues and to create forums where they discuss solutions for disaster risk issues. What we also hoping is that parliamentarians, now that they've started meeting in their many different groupings, may work together and share the guidance on how they have tackled the issues they are faced with and their experiences. So maybe a guidance document, a checklist of things to do and the impact it may have, may be one of the outcomes of the parliamentarians' work, the ones that we have seen now running into action. And my final point is about financing and the economic impact. This is the area that has had least attention by research so far. Now, since a few years, the situation is rapidly improving because as decision makers, you have to understand your options better. The World Bank has looked very much at this because it impacted their investments. They are now about to publish a report in a couple of months which looks at the cost-benefit of risk reduction. OECD has looked at this as well. They are particularly triggered by climate change issues, but it's pretty much the same dilemmas. Very often when we discuss this, the insurance industry is brought up as at least a partial way forward. Insurance is overtaxed. Some of you will remember Hurricane Andrew in the United States almost destroyed the U.S. insurance market because of the losses were so great and the reinsurance industry could not really cope with that. So the insurance industry is part of our learning here, but many of the issues that we deal with in risk transfer and risk insurance go far beyond what they alone can cope with. There is no commercial option to start with, and I think the understanding is that there will be a requirement of a public-private partnership or public seed money into certain insurance schemes that may be help to deal with the impending cost. But the way is there. There are very excellent and interesting insurance schemes for disasters in middle-income countries that are worthwhile looking at, and I think since Turkey is part of this assembly, Turkey is one of the countries that have really developed this in a very innovative way, and it works well. So they are really models to look at how one uses insurance schemes. But it doesn't work for everything everywhere, of course, and particularly poor countries have limited options in this area. So that's my final point here. Sorry for taking a lot of time from you after your first session here. But my final encouragement, after having listened to parliamentarians from other regions, is call for specialist briefings. Don't hesitate to call on people like us or UN or other scientific organizations, and to really dwell on what we know today and what we don't know today, because of course not insignificant parts of what we fear for the future is not really well known today, which is I think one of our challenges, that we can plan for 5 years when in reality we need to plan for 35 years. And we don't feel very certain about that knowledge yet. So thank you very much for that. And if you have some questions, of course, I would like to answer them.
شكراً لضيفتنا الكريمة مارغريتا على هذا الجهد الطيب، وقد أعطيتينا من وقتك الخاص، وسافرت أيضا يعني مسافة بالطيران لنستمع إلى معلوماتك الطيبة التي أثرت معرفتنا. أنا أتحدث على الأقل عن نفسي وباسم زملائي، نعم لقد أثريت وأغنيت معرفتنا في هذا المجال والذي بدأ العالم ينتبه له مجددا خلال السنوات الأخيرة وأعطائه الأهمية والأولوية لضرورة الاهتمام به ومتابعته. شكرا مرة ثانية لضيفتنا الكريمة، ونفتح المجال لدقائق من الأسئلة لعلني أريحكم بعض الأسئلة وفي باستراحة قصيرة. السيد محمود من الأردن، ثم السيدة من اليونان، من اليونان، ثم الزميل، ثم الزميل من الجزائر. فنبدأ، من طلب الحديث أولا، اليونان أم الأردن؟
والله أنا بحب، أنا بحب اليونان، بس رافع صبعي قبله.
بدنا نعطي الحديث لليونان إذا سمحت.
تحيزت معهم.
نعم تحيزت.
تحيز مع اليونان.
أنت سببت لي التحيز. تفضل يا السيدة الكريمة من اليونان.
Well, thank you, Mr. President. I would like to congratulate the lady for its presentation. It was very informative. But I would like to raise a question. You said that we know that this happens, that most of the disasters happen in developing or underdeveloped, in the most poor countries, areas of the world. Have you found any scientific reasons? I don't speak about the impact of the disaster, and this is understandable, that because they don't have the means, the knowledge, the technology, the impact is much bigger in these areas than in other parts of the world. But why? I mean, is it just a coincidence, or there are scientific reasons why the big disasters happen in some parts of the world where the countries are less developed? I mean, I speak about the cause and not about the impact. Thank you very much.
شكرا. الأردن.
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. شكرا الأخ الرئيس. بداية أثمن جهود السيدة ويستروم والتي رفدتنا بهذه المعلومات القيمة التي تحاول حماية الجنس البشري. ورد في حديثها أن البسطاء يقولون أن الخير والشر من الله، وأنا أقول كذلك حتى ولو انسحب علي هذا المسمى البساطة. فولادة السيد المسيح عليه السلام هي خير، لأنه أنقذ البشرية وعم السلام. وعقوبة آل لوط الوارد في الإصحاح السابع من كتابهم هي شر، لأنه رفعت قرية سدوم إلى السماء ثم أنزلت إلى الأرض ومسحت بالتمام، فهذا شر. وكلاهما من الله إن اتفقت أو لم تتفق. لكن الكارثة التي يسهم بها الإنسان يمكن التحكم بها، مثل انفجار تشيرنوبل أو انهيار مناجم في الصين أو ما ينتج عن تلوث الأنهار. لكن كيف نتحكم أيتها السيدة المحترمة بزلزال أغادير أو بركان فيزوف أو تسونامي أو ارتفاع درجة الحرارة كما يحصل الآن في موسكو؟ اليوم موسكو درجة الحرارة 24، وبدأت كتل الثلج الكبرى في جرينلاند وتوابعها والمتجمد الجنوبي بالانهيارات. أولف بالم رئيس وزراء السويد كلف عام 1984 مجموعة من العلماء بدراسة المناخ في السويد بعد 50 عام. هل يستطيع هؤلاء؟ ما الذي يضمن لهم دراسة سليمة إذا ما حدثت حرب رفعت درجة الحرارة كما هو الحال في الوضع الذي أقيم في الخليج ما بين عامي 79 وأعني بالحرب الخليج الأولى وحتى الآن، وما تسقط عليه من قنابل أو إذا اتسع ثقب الأوزون كيف نفعل؟ كما ذكرت السيدة المحترمة أن إفريقيا تعتبر منجم الفقر في العالم، إذ أن 70% من سكان إفريقيا يعانون من الفقر. هل يستطيع هؤلاء التحكم بالكوارث أو الاحتياط لها؟ كما أن معظم السواحل اليابانية مهددة بالزلازل والأعاصير، هل نستطيع كما ذكرت يمكن ترحيل السكان من مكان إلى مكان، هل نستطيع ترحيل سكان شواطئ اليابان لنضمن لهم السلامة؟ عندها يموتون من الجوع. لذا الكوارث التي يتسبب بها الإنسان يمكن التحكم بها، أما التي لا يستطيع إيقافها فإنه من الصعب أن نتحكم بها. شكرا.
شكرا دكتور محمود من الأردن. الأخ الزميل من الجزائر تفضل.
شكرا سيد الرئيس.
وبعد الزميل من الجزائر سنستمع إلى وجهة نظر من زميلة من فرنسا، وبعدها نأخذ بريك إذا سمحتم. تفضل.
شكرا سيد الرئيس، سادة الحضور، السلام عليكم ورحمة الله تعالى وبركاته. السلام عليكم. في البداية تدخلي هذا يتمحور ببعض المواضيع خاصة وهي علمية بالدرجة الأولى. إذن أتكلم باللغة الأجنبية وهي الفرنسية، وأقول بأن التقرير المقدم من طرف مارغريتا أمستروم إتان غابور سيانتيفيك إكي ديفيني تو لي زاسبي دونان أدي ريسك et à des désastres constatés sur le globe terrestre. Mais il est utile de rappeler que l'APM doit contribuer d'une manière globale, surtout au niveau des 25 pays adhérents, pour dire que la climatologie ou bien le changement climatique est un effort très prépondérant. Donc, si nous parlons des inondations, des tremblements de terre ou de la désertification, madame, ou du dégel, des glaciers ou des avalanches, c'est pour vous dire que le changement climatique est d'un tout grand apport sur les désastres causés au niveau du globe. Donc, il va sans dire que la première question que je dois poser, est-ce que les gaz à effet de serre ont un impact direct sur les foyers de désastre ou de catastrophe dans certains pays. Pour vous dire, dans ce contexte, que certains pays pauvres sont tellement pauvres qu'ils subissent des dégradations de l'ozone, comme l'a dit mon prédécesseur jordanien, sur la question de leur territoire du ciel. Donc il va sans dire que la PM doit jouer un rôle très, très important pour amender certaines résolutions au niveau même de l'ONU. Pour vous dire que certaines études, et là je propose un semblant d'organisation, c'est-à-dire une agence parallèle à l'OMM, Organisation Mondiale de la Météorologie, sur le bassin méditerranéen, pour dire que certaines études, ou bien des études de cordons sismiques, partant de la Turquie ou la Grèce jusqu'à Agadir, en Algérie, à Alger ou en Mauritanie, pour que ces études soient un peu fiables et créer des réseaux d'informations fiables et opérationnels sur l'ensemble des territoires du bassin, c'est-à-dire pour déterminer d'une manière globale et gérer au mieux ces catastrophes. Il va sans dire que dans ces mécanismes, dans ces conditions, des coordinations efficaces aussi par des partenaires nationaux ou internationaux, toujours dans le cadre du bassin méditerranéen. Et la Syrie a donné l'exemple au cours du séisme d'Alger en 2001 ou l'inondation de Baglouet, où une gestion importante établie, préétablie par le gouvernement qui a donné des résultats positifs. C'est dans ce cadre que je demanderai à l'ensemble des pays riverains des deux rives de créer une petite agence concernant seulement les pays à y déterminer tout l'impact des risques provoqués par ces catastrophes. En conclusion, je dirais merci à Madame Margaretha Armstrong pour son intervention qui a été d'une manière scientifique mais efficace à l'élaboration de certaines résolutions donnant un apport sur le développement économique et social des pays riverains et des pays du bassin méditerranéen. Et merci.
شكرا للزميل من الجزائر. واضح أن لديك خبرة جيدة في مجال الأرصاد الجوية وعلى علاقة كبيرة في هذا الموضوع، واقتراحك جدير بالاهتمام وسنتحدث به لاحقا. تفضل السيدة الكريمة من فرنسا، تفضلي.
Merci monsieur le président. Je m'associe aux remerciements pour cet exposé très complet, madame. Et je souhaite vous poser des questions relatives au risque de tsunami en Méditerranée. Ce risque a fait l'objet d'une étude, d'un rapport assez complet d'un collègue sénateur Roland Courteau, au nom de notre office parlementaire d'évaluation des choix scientifiques et technologiques. Alors, comment, madame, s'articule le rôle dans ce domaine de la Commission océanographique internationale et de la stratégie internationale de réduction des risques? Quelle est votre appréciation sur l'état de préparation des pays méditerranéens face au risque de tsunami? Quand pensez-vous qu'un système d'alerte rapide au tsunami pourra être, et couvrant toute la Méditerranée, pourra être opérationnel? Les travaux menés dans ce but sous l'égide du groupe intergouvernemental de coordination pour l'Atlantique Nord et la Méditerranée ne progressent-ils pas, à votre avis, un peu trop lentement? Avez-vous des suggestions à faire en la matière sur les risques de tsunami? Et je profite de l'occasion d'avoir la parole pour remercier notre collègue José Junquero d'avoir intégré dans son projet de résolution un amendement de notre délégation.
شكراً سيناتور كاري. الزميل من القبرص تفضل. وأرجو عدم الإطالة إن جاز لي أن أطلب ذلك.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. You very correctly pointed out that Africa, and particularly the sub-Saharan Africa, is a very fragile region where major climate changes and natural disasters occur. And I'm particularly referring to the case, for instance, of the Lake Chad, which is extremely vital both for the environment of the region as well as for the economy of the local population. On the other hand, both the political instability in those countries and the economic weakness of the societies do not allow measures to be taken and to be implemented, to be enforced. So I would like to ask you, how can your agency intervene in a practical manner in order to support all the necessary policies and the measures which are required? Thank you.
شكرا للزميل من قبرص. لنلخص إجابات من ونستمع من السيدة ضيفتنا الكريمة وولستروم إذا سمحتي بدقائق. وكما تشاهدين طبعا أنت ضيفة ومطلقة الحرية في الوقت الذي تريه مناسبا للرد على الأسئلة. شكرا.
Very much. This is your coffee break, I think. Yes. Yeah, thank you. Let me thank you for these questions and comments and suggestions from all of you. I'll try to do my best to respond to some of them, but just as a background, and I'll tell you that this report is available in 4 languages, so we can send you your personal copies in Arabic, French, Spanish and English. If the Secretary General makes sure we have your addresses, we will send it to you. But what I really wanted to say is that 4 meters of CD-ROMs is the base material for this, the 7,000 disasters over 30 years and the modeling that has been developed for doing it. So there's certainly a wealth of information and details available for all of you to use. It is also available on our public website, which is called Prevention Web, and there you can go. And you can, on the website, you can also find all the national reports on the progress of Yoga Framework for Action, and they are by now over 100 reports there from countries that discuss these issues very frankly. So what about the causes as opposed to the impact? We try to, and that's why the recommendations of the report has got to do very much with poverty issues, because the main causes are that poor people, and therefore poor countries, but also poor people in rich countries, have less resources, so they live in more vulnerable places. And if you look at the report, you will see that there is a lot of attention given to urban risk. Why? Because these are the fastest growing areas where infrastructure is very often not keeping up with people's wish to live in cities. So you have flooding because you don't have drains, you have accidents because you haven't laid out roads, etc. And these are typical things why poor people are more exposed. If you also look at cities around the world, you just take a look and see where in an urban area poor people tend to live in the more risky part of the city, and less poor people live at, and this is a typical pattern not only in fast growing areas, but if you remember the terrible landslides they had in Colombia some years ago, where lots of people were killed in a landslide because they lived in very fragile housing building up here. So if you're looking at real drivers of risk and hence of the disasters, it's got to do with resources, with poverty, with the construction of infrastructure, with lack of education, lack of access to education. These are all factors that we can see when you start working on certain factors that things change. And you can, the story is not all negative, I must say. There is a tendency that we talk about the problems, but we've also collected for this report many examples of where communities, small cities around the world, under good leadership, have really pulled together and changed the conditions in their local environment. And addressing the root causes of poverty and risk. And so that says something also about the need and the quality of governance. Institutions may not be rich, but the institutions know what their job is, and they got at least minimal resources to deal with them. And there is engagement between the community and the leadership. So I think you will find enough examples of how it works, equally, of course, in rich countries. Is it the coincidence? It is not a coincidence, of course, that poverty is a driving factor of this, but it is really a main cause that brings these things together. If you have resources, you can move out of harm's way. You can move to safer areas if you want to, but I think too many of us still would like to live at riversides and seasides, not really thinking about the potential impact of the cyclones. If you look at every year in Florida, how the population evacuates and comes back and evacuates and come back, but they show no inclination to move inland. So we like to live there and we have the money to be safer. You have a strong social organization. In terms of the representative of Jordan, disaster, we cannot control earthquakes, of course. They will continue to happen. What we can do is to reduce our exposure to the impact of earthquakes, which means not building hospitals on earthquake fault lines, not building schools on known and identified fault lines. Also looking at building standards. Every country has building standards. We know that the issue, it's not necessarily that we don't have the legislation, but the implementation for economic reasons sometimes is not very strong. So we got the means of reducing the impact of a hazard which we cannot control. And I think this is something that we really need to take into consideration, that we are living in harmony, sometimes disharmony with nature. Nature has its own will, but humankind, men, and we all impact the environment we are living in, and your concern with environment and ecosystems is precisely that. We are changing the environment, and the environment reacts in a different way. That's why this issue of what we can impact, I think, sir, you mentioned rising temperatures. Well, if there is something we can impact, it is certainly that. Hence the issue of mitigation targets and how we continue to impact longer term the global temperatures. We may not be able, well, for sure we will not be able to change the course of that in a perspective that is we can oversee. But over a longer period of time, as all of you, I'm sure, are very familiar with, we basically hit the deadline for action that will change things drastically within the next 20 years. We don't have much time left to take such action that will change the future behind that when it comes to climate risk. So the icebergs will continue to melt. I think it's in our hands to decide to what extent they will melt. So disasters are not natural, they are man-made, because I put myself in harm's way, so I am the cause of the disaster. It's not nature. We should not blame nature, of course. I think you also mentioned the link to conflict and hazards and how they reinforce each other. And this is, of course, a very evident case. If we take the case of drought, which is the most difficult disaster to understand how it works, a drought may not become a disaster in a country that is well organized, at peace, you have buffer stocks of food, you have social networks. In a country that is in conflict, at war, of course a drought will have very severe effects on the economy, but on the health and welfare of the population. But on the other hand, the question, can Africa reduce risk? Yes, of course Africa can reduce risk. And Africa is extremely busy at taking the action that will reduce risk within the measures that they have. In our meeting last week, it was very interesting that most participants from governments came from Africa and Asia and Latin America. Europe is maybe not quite strongly there yet in understanding and acknowledging its own risk patterns. But in a pressing amount of governments from Africa are there. They got the institutional structures in place. They are very focused on what needs to be done. And they need collaboration from all of us to make it possible in terms of resources. Thank you for the comment by the representative of Algeria. As I just underlined, this is a report based on science, but we need to learn a lot more. The findings of this report cannot be applied at local level yet. This is a global picture. Now we continue the work to do data collection and analysis that will then apply to countries individually, and what we are hoping, of course, is that countries will take this and develop their own resources to do very precise risk assessment on the basis of these projections. So a resolution that supports countries that have less resources would probably be a very welcome issue. One of our first recommendations is always, when you look at the country or a region in a country, is understand the risk and identify what the issues are, because if we cannot start doing everything everywhere, we have to understand what it is we are addressing. And that's what we try to work very closely with countries and organizations. So in terms of the question about the tsunami in the Mediterranean, well, I think human beings, we tend to put history behind us and forget. This is a city that was devastated by a big earthquake 250 years ago only. But I think it's a living memory here in Lisbon. Tsunamis have hit the European inner sea, the Mediterranean. And I think it's now, after the Indian Ocean tsunami, it's a concrete element of understanding. But I'm not so sure that Europe or Mediterranean together sees it as a first priority to deal with. The early warning systems that we are building, we strongly recommend they have to be multi-hazard. So not just be designed to address one risk element. It's too expensive, and then we will build multiple and complicated early warning systems that will end up not talking to each other. So we recommend early warning systems and chains of early warning systems. And as you know, madam, probably the IOC, the UNESCO's early warning wing, has been very involved in working with regional organizations in the Caribbean after the tsunami, a bit in Europe, but not enough, I think. The whole Mediterranean is the focus for some research and engagement. But I would expect and hope that in the Euromed initiative, which is the beginning of your Mediterranean collaboration on disaster management, you would have a strong element of early warning systems that talk to each other. Early warning systems are very are lots about technology, of which we have a lot, but it's also about social systems. We will never forget the gentleman in one of the ministries in Indonesia whom I met just after the tsunami, and everyone at that point talked about, didn't you get any warning? And I asked him, I said, did you get any warning? He said, yes, I got the warning. I think he was in the Met services, but he said, I had no one to send the warning on to, because the early warning system requires a chain from the satellite to the people, to the local community, to the local authorities, to I who stand at the beach. I need to have a warning signal that I recognize to move away. On the other hand, in Kenya, because a very talented journalist and a Met Service person, they got the message and they actually sent out a radio message to people in Kenya to move off the beaches. So early warning systems is a complex chain that requires an engagement of all the aspects that I talked about. But certainly the Mediterranean region, of all regions in the world, have a huge capacity to get this to work. And I think, because of the nature of different types of risk you have here, in addition to the potential of a tsunami,
and the huge opportunity for collaboration in terms of major disasters. An early warning is something to envisage. That's my personal view. The same thing finally on Lake Chad and similar lakes around the world. So you mentioned a country that doesn't have the economic capacity and maybe probably not the political one either to launch into their own initiative here. But I think we are now at the stage of history where we know that these kinds of situations cannot be solved by a country alone. A disaster is not a concern for one single country or a potential for a disaster. Lake Chad's disappearance affects all of us. It's like the Brazilian forests and many other of these issues. So many of such initiatives, and we could have a role, of course, in the United Nations, depend on collaboration among many countries. In a sense of that this is a priority because of its impact. There is also Lake Cameroon in Africa. There are many situations like this around the world. And maybe as a consequence of what we hope will be an agreement in Copenhagen, we will get a stronger force of action for these kinds of collaborative measures, that countries are not left to feel that they have to focus only on their own. Hopefully, yes, sir. My job is to be optimist. Yes. Thank you.
Thank you, Sayyid Wallström. على الإجابة على الاستضاحات السادة الكرام الزملاء عشر دقائق استراحة لأنه أنا السيجارة صارت ترقص قدامي على الواحد ونص شكرا نعود بعد عشر دقائق والسادة الزملاء الكرام بعد أن استرحنا قليلا ورحنا أعصابنا وأعصابكم بعض الشيء يمكننا الآن إكمال جدول أعمالنا والبدء بعرض مسودة التقارير المناطة باللجنة الدائمة الثانية ومرة ثانية باسم أعضاء اللجنة أشكر المقررين ونواب المقررين على عملهم الشاق وكذلك أشكر أعضاء الوفود الجدد والضيوف على اقتراحاتهم وتعديلاتهم على مسودة التقارير التي تم أخذها بعين الاعتبار نأتي الآن إلى موضوع إدارة الكوارث مرة أخرى وسنستمع من الزميل المحترم جوسي جانكيرو ومرة أخرى وأخرى شكرا جزيلا له على جهوده وعلى استضافتنا في هذه المدينة الجميلة وأرجو من السيد جانكيرو أن يقدم لنا ما لديه حول إدارة الكوارث والتخفيف من أثارها تفضل سيد جانكيرو إذا سمحت
Obrigado, Sr. Presidente. Sr. Presidente, os seus convidados, caros colegas, eu procurarei ser rápido, mas na apresentação daquilo que é o projeto de resolução e o relatório, e também agradecer desde já a colaboração da Grécia e da França nas sugestões que fizeram e que nós, como é óbvio, englobámos e metemos no nosso relatório. Eu faria algumas considerações, depois iria passar um PowerPoint, que no fundo é uma resposta às 13 perguntas que estão feitas no relatório, às duas sugestões para uma atuação no âmbito nacional e também a duas sugestões para a atuação do âmbito internacional. E, portanto, este PowerPoint é um exemplo concreto de como é que nós nos organizamos exatamente nos termos do relatório e da resolução. E perante estas situações de catástrofes que têm ocorrido nos últimos anos na bacia do Mediterrâneo, nomeadamente em Portugal e na Grécia, nós conhecemos bem essa realidade, há que refletir sobre a capacidade de reação e também sobre o nível de preparação das catástrofes naturais que afetam toda a região. e também fazê-lo numa perspectiva de, idêntica ao que nos foi sugerida pela nossa convidada Margareta, que aqui acabou de fazer a sua intervenção. E, portanto, a coordenação e a assistência entre os membros da APM depende muito dos acordos bilaterais assinados entre os diferentes países, e também depende muito se esses países são ou não membros da União Europeia e se são ou não beneficiários de programas das Nações Unidas. Relatórios recentes apontam muito para uma falta de coordenação efetiva entre os mecanismos nacionais e regionais e internacionais. E a vontade política é, digamos aqui, o fator-chave para poder ultrapassar esta resolução. Ou os governos querem ou não querem resolver. Se querem resolver, têm que decidir. E enquanto membros do Parlamento, nós temos um papel também muito importante a desempenhar, como, aliás, reflete o projeto de resolução que têm e que vos foi distribuído. Identificámos, como eu já referi há pouco, um conjunto de contributos, nomeadamente da França e também da Grécia, que poderão nortear no seu conjunto e globalmente as atuações que se impõem defender, para defender as populações e as realidades dos nossos países. Como informação, portanto, complementar, farei esta passagem de PowerPoint de uma experiência portuguesa que, como disse, procura ser a resposta prática ao conjunto de perguntas concretas que nós colocámos nos nossos trabalhos e que informa o projeto de resolução e o projeto de relatório. Portanto, este, pergunta-se, ou aliás disse, todos nós devemos ter um sistema de proteção civil. E de facto nós temos um sistema de proteção civil, que é este que nós vemos aqui, e portanto que é uma entidade concreta e que coordena todas as ações. E no fundo, este sistema pretende prevenir riscos coletivos, atenuar os seus efeitos, proteger e socorrer as pessoas em situações em que elas ocorrem. Eu suponho que têm a documentação distribuída em francês e inglês, pelo menos, e poderão acompanhar esta projeção. Como vê, temos aqui, são os chamados soldados da paz e um conjunto de equipamentos que são adestritos. Portanto, prevenir, atenuar, socorrer e apoiar são os grandes objetivos da atividade de proteção civil, mas como entidade da administração pública, ela tem, é um serviço central com natureza operacional. E que tem o quê? Tem autonomia administrativa, financeira, património próprio e está na dependência do governo responsável pela área da administração. Alguns destes meios são, de facto, meios, são os meios que pertencem à proteção civil, peço desculpa. Para fazerem uma ideia do que vou dizer a seguir, refiro o seguinte. O nosso país está dividido em 18 distritos no continente. E cada um dos distritos está dividido em concelhos. Eu apresento aqui, por exemplo, um concelho que está dividido por ele próprio em 24 municípios. Mas cada um dos municípios tem ainda várias freguesias. E é nesse âmbito nacional, distrital, do município e da freguesia que se estrutura esta nossa experiência. Aqui, como entidade da administração, nós procuramos fazer a requalificação das infraestruturas operacionais, de telecomunicações, de reunião, de meio, de instalações. Procurámos melhorar muito os sistemas de informação às pessoas, como veem aqui, mas também todos os outros sistemas de comunicação que são fundamentais em momentos de catástrofe. Agora, alguns resultados alcançados. Estes são veículos que vêm aqui, que são atribuídos a comandos a cada um dos distritos. Cada um dos distritos tem estes veículos operacionais. Para que exista mobilidade e autonomia na atuação da proteção civil. Depois, como aliás se recomenda, nós temos constituído uma reserva logística para apoio a populações sinistradas, desde materiais de campanha, medicamentos, enfim, tudo o que podem ver aqui. É a tal reserva logística que também foi o problema levantado nas nossas reuniões. E temos no âmbito da proteção e socorro a missão da Associação Nacional de Proteção Civil, que é o quê? Planear, coordenar e executar a política de proteção civil. Era o que se perguntava, se havia planeamento, se havia coordenação, como é que se executava. E também todas estas políticas, estas são situações reais, as que vêm aqui, quem coordena, ou digamos a entidade máxima responsável, é o ministro respectivo, neste caso da Administração Interna. Aqui há a realização de exercícios de âmbito nacional, pergunta-se no relatório e também na resolução se há em todos os países exercícios que possam treinar estas forças para situações reais de catástrofe, e a verdade é que nós temos vários exercícios, e temos aqui imagem desses mesmos exercícios, que, são, que nos permitem detectar o quê? Pontos fortes, pontos fracos. Onde é que numa situação simulada nós temos as nossas fragilidades para podermos corrigir? E temos exemplos da proteção e socorro em vários domínios, com forças nacionais e também em exercícios internacionais. Por exemplo, no Luxemburgo, em Itália, na Sardanha, e também em França, com forças e exercícios especiais que permitem a troca de experiências entre a nossa realidade e a realidade desses países. Uma coisa é fazer face àquilo que pode ser um desastre ou uma catástrofe natural no nosso país, outra coisa é a cooperação internacional, mas para termos cooperação internacional nós temos de estar treinados para esse efeito. Temos também missão de assistência técnica, temos exemplos concretos no Peru, ou ajuda humanitária na China, que são as missões internacionais reais. E na área do planeamento de emergência há, digamos, uma entidade científica e técnica dentro da Proteção Civil que tem a tal organização municipal. E aqui podem ver, por estas fotografias, podem ver aqui, nesta fotografia, por exemplo, é uma sessão pública num governo civil, porque em cada distrito existe um representante do governo e, portanto, as forças em presença interessadas estão aqui nessa sessão. Depois têm também uma sessão de trabalho no governo civil com forças da GNR, que é a Guarda Nacional Republicana, do Exército, para além dos bombeiros e de todos aqueles que intervêm no combate aos acidentes e aos fogos. E aqui é a imagem de uma sessão municipal onde se desloca, onde está o Presidente da Câmara Local, onde se desloca o representante do Governo, o representante ou autoridade do Distrito, e nesse município fazem essa sensibilização. Na área do planeamento de emergência, para a zona metropolitana de Lisboa, nós tivemos um grande terremoto, como foi aqui referido pela nossa convidada Margareta, em 1755, mas temos zonas de grande sensibilidade no Algarve. Em 1755 foi devastador para nós, mas também para o norte de Marrocos, ficou isso perfeitamente comprovado. E, ao nível científico e técnico, há alguns estudos que nós fazemos para ajudar a organizar, nomeadamente um estudo de risco sísmico e de tsunamis no Algarve. Portanto, este é o objetivo para a elaboração de um plano especial de emergência. Depois, vários manuais para o impacto ambiental, para planos de emergência externos, para a operacionalização da emergência da proteção civil e ainda um manual para planos de segurança. Produzimos, de acordo com as nossas preocupações e os contributos de todos os colegas, produzimos legislação que se adapte à realidade dos nossos dias, nomeadamente a reconfiguração da regulamentação da segurança contra incêndios em edifícios, o problema dos hospitais que referi há bocado, ou o problema dos novos edifícios. Tudo isso já está a ser enquadrado na nossa legislação para ser respeitado. E temos também uma informação e uma sensibilização. Reparem, neste caso, nós temos este é um projeto que é um clube de proteção civil, mas é um projeto dirigido às crianças do segundo e terceiro ciclo. Há uma grande aposta nas escolas. E temos aqui dois tipos de folhetos temáticos. Este que vêem aqui é para as pessoas em geral, mas temos um conjunto de outra informação preparadas para as crianças e jovens, com sete temas diferentes. E tudo isto é, digamos, feito ao nível da escola e ao nível mais básico. Portanto, hoje, nos nossos planos curriculares, estas preocupações estão, de facto, contempladas e integradas. Como estão, por exemplo, se for na segurança rodoviária, escolas de trânsito, que também estão feitas, para eles poderem familiarizar-se com essa realidade. Agora, o que é que os deputados, os parlamentares, podem fazer? Nós temos aqui alguns exemplos. Por exemplo, esta é uma sessão pública antes do início daquilo que nós supomos ser uma época particularmente perigosa de catástrofes, de incêndios. Em cada distrito é apresentado todo o dispositivo existente. E, portanto, os presidentes de Câmara, corredor civil, membros do governo e deputados estão presentes nessa apresentação para tomarem boa nota do que está no terreno. E depois, aqui na Assembleia da República, é constituída anualmente uma comissão eventual para seguir, por exemplo, a questão dos focos florestais. Ou seja, os deputados dos vários partidos reúnem-se numa comissão que, durante esse período, mesmo durante as férias parlamentares, eles continuam ativos e continuam a acompanhar o dispositivo por todo o país, para perceber em cada distrito qual é o grau de resposta ou inventariar problemas. E os deputados têm a capacidade, depois de vir aqui, questionar o governo sobre aquilo que acharam mal ou que acham bem, ou dar as sugestões para fazer essa modificação. E é, portanto, também o papel dos parlamentares, que é, neste caso, uma forma concreta de poderem atuar. Os parlamentares, convém não esquecer, fiscalizam o governo. E como essas comissões têm elementos de todos os partidos, não há hipótese de uma de não ser fiscalizado. É mesmo questionado sempre nestas ocasiões. Depois temos aqui a articulação, como se diz no relatório, como é que nós nos articulamos com outras forças. Por exemplo, estas fotografias aqui respeitam um curso de promoção oficial general e os elementos desse curso visitaram a Associação Nacional de Proteção Civil. Para quê? Para que eles próprios conheçam o sistema, como ele está a funcionar e se possam familiarizar com ele. E embaixo temos um curso de promoção a sargento-chefe da Marinha, que dentro do seu plano curricular também vai contactar a Associação Nacional de Proteção Civil para se familiarizar com aquilo que existe e possam, portanto, ter um conhecimento mínimo para poderem, na eventualidade, se poderem articular melhor. Estas imagens são imagens de sensibilização pública. Umas são campanhas nacionais na área da informação e sensibilização, e em que se faz aqui o quê? É um apelo e um incentivo ao voluntariado. Pessoas que na sua vida têm tempo disponível ou se conseguem articular para ajudar. Bom, têm um enquadramento no sistema. Aqui são campanhas de sensibilização com esses incentivos e, digamos, imagens de sessões nos distritos com essa finalidade. Por fim, nós procuramos fazer formação. Neste caso, temos uma formação feita em Angola, portanto, dirigida aos países da Cplp, países de língua oficial portuguesa, Angola e Moçambique. Temos também aqui a cooperação técnica ou policial em ações internacionais, ainda em 2008, Angola, Cabo Verde, Moçambique, São Tomé e Príncipe. E temos uma força especial de bombeiros, que é esta que vêm aqui, que são bombeiros preparados para intervenções mais rápidas, desde que dado um sinal de alarme, com equipamentos próprios e especiais. E é a Força Especial de Bombeiros. Aqui temos uma, na área dos bombeiros de portugueses, das equipas de intervenção permanente, Temos protocolos e parcerias com reconhecimentos locais de risco, zonas críticas, e são constituídas por 5 elementos que asseguram a prestação de socorro na área do respectivo corpo de bombeiros. Uma novidade no nosso sistema é o grupo de intervenção de proteção civil. Ora, de proteção e socorro. Quem são estes senhores? São paramilitares. É a Guarda Nacional Republicana. Então, a Guarda Nacional Republicana estou com um conjunto de elementos para o sistema que, pela sua disciplina, rigor, prontidão, não só patrulham, como têm capacidade própria de intervenção. Por exemplo, se utilizarem um helicóptero, desde que dado o sinal de alarme, eles podem estar em 15 minutos no sítio onde existe a catástrofe. E digamos que este rigor, esta prontidão, esta disciplina militar veio influenciar positivamente todo o sistema de proteção civil, porque muitas vezes o que existe é falta de atenção, atrasos, descoordenação. É isso que pretendemos evitar. Depois, na cooperação bilateral, temos protocolos na Europa, Espanha, França e Rússia, e em Marrocos e Cabo Verde, portanto em África. E na cooperação multilateral em matéria de proteção civil na União Europeia, temos este conjunto de organismos que vêm aqui, com quem nos procuramos articular o melhor possível. E temos uma cooperação multilateral em matéria de proteção civil, em casos concretos, em Marrocos, enfim, em sítios onde houve desastres violentos e onde foi necessária a nossa ajuda. Nos últimos 5 anos, o que é que isto traduz? Traduz que de 2005 até hoje, a área ardida diminuiu destes 338 mil hectares para, o ano passado, apenas 17 mil. Mas a nossa preocupação é grande, por exemplo, este ano, com as condições climatéricas. De qualquer forma, esta forma estruturada de intervenção conduziu a este resultado. E as ocorrências, fruto das campanhas também de sensibilização e de educação, diminuem de 35 mil para 13 mil, e nós vemos aqui ao lado a vermelho aquilo que é a média dos últimos anos. Uma pequena nota por curiosidade. Distritos, concelhos, cada concelho tem várias freguesias. As freguesias, regra geral, candidataram-se a ter um kit de intervenção. Cada pequeno núcleo, 1000 pessoas, 500 pessoas, 2000 que há nessa freguesia, tem um kit de intervenção, que é um carro com um pequeno sistema para bombear água e poder ocorrer logo na freguesia a apagar aquele primeiro foco de incêndio. Agora, quais são os desafios futuros? Concluir o recenseamento dos corpos de bombeiros e continuar permanentemente a requalificar os meios operacionais, implantar o que já está praticamente todo feito, os serviços municipais de proteção civil, articulados com o nacional, reformular os planos de emergência municipais e especiais, e também concluir a modificação e a requalificação da rede de comunicações e incrementar, digamos, a interoperabilidade de forças e sistemas de proteção da União Europeia através da realização em Portugal do exercício internacional à escala europeia. Meus caros colegas, é esta a nossa experiência, que procura traduzir na prática aquilo que tem no relatório e na resolução, e que é, digamos, o nosso contributo para, digamos, podermos em conjunto melhorar as condições de prevenção e de ataque àquilo que podem ser os desastres e são catástrofes naturais. Muito obrigado.
شكرا سعادة الزميل جوزي جنكيرو على الجهد الطيب، ونحن جميعا نتفهم بأن الجهد في هذا المجال لا يزال متواضعا، لكن على مستوى جمعيتنا فنعتقد أننا سائرون في الاتجاه الصحيح، وسيكون لنا مزيدا من البحث في هذا الموضوع خلال العام القادم، وإذا لاحظتم مؤخرا استفدنا من السيدة ويلستروم عندما ذكرت بأن اجتماعات في هذا المجال ستعقد في دافوس وفي مواقع أخرى، وسيكون لنا إن شاء الله حضورا فعالا بها ومع زميلتنا السيدة بابا ديمترو. الآن أطرح المصادقة على التقرير والقرار حول موضوع إدارة الكوارث الذي استمعنا إليه للتو. فهل نصوت ونقر؟ السيدة بابا ديمترو، السيدة بابا ديمترو، جست يعني دقائق بسيطة حتى نقر، حتى نقر الموضوع المتعلق بإدارة الكوارث. هل السكوت يعني الموافقة؟ واضح جدا. شكرا على المصادقة على القرار والتقرير الخاص بإدارة الكوارث الطبيعية، والآن سنستمر في عرض مناقشاتنا. الجزء الثاني، هل من سمعت صوتا صغيرا في السحر؟ نتابع نتائج الجزء الثاني من اجتماعنا حول تقرير وقرار البيئة والتغير المناخي الذي صديقتنا وزميلتنا بابا ديمترو معنية بهذا الأمر، وعلمنا أنه سيعقد مؤتمر دولي في نهاية العام كما ذكرنا في الصباح للمناقشة والموافقة على مؤتمر كوتو 2 كما سماها السيد بريسكوت في ليمسول قبرص. الآن باسمكم نطلب من السيدة أليسا بابا ديمترو أن تقدم لنا ما لديها حول هذا الموضوع، فتفضلي يا سيدتي. شكرا لك.
Good morning to all of you again. I want to thank all the rapporteurs of this morning's work, the first session of the morning. I want to congratulate our colleague Jose Junqueiro, and I want to sincerely thank Mrs. Margareta Wallström for the wonderful speech she delivered here, as good as ever. I'm sorry to have missed her in Geneva last week, but she really compensated my regrets. And of course, I also thank her very much, even though she should already be out of Lisbon, that she stayed on to hear some bits of parliamentarian wisdom, I hope. So, dear colleagues, the report and the resolution that I'm presenting today is part of an effort of our Assembly to address the common concerns of our region. The issue of climate change is classified for us also as top priority in our agenda ever since the birth of the Parliamentary Assembly of the Mediterranean. I was lucky and honored to be the rapporteur from the beginning of PAM on climate change and on acknowledging the facts behind it. This time, I have just decided to pay tribute to the ongoing negotiations for the post-Kyoto era. You remember our first report, since you all voted for it, was a long 18-page report on the situation, on the state of the environment, not only in our region, I would say world report. But now, the report refers to the basic elements of the Kyoto Protocol, its drawbacks, and the ongoing negotiations for a new agreement replacing the one that expires in 2012. The Bali Roadmap set year 2009 as the year of concluding an agreement with a view to allow enough time for ratification of the successor treaty. The report explicitly describes the challenges faced by different groups of countries, including the ones participating in our assembly. The developed countries, all but one, have recognized their share of responsibility for the accumulated harm to the environment over the past two centuries. The principle of equity is embedded in the 1992 United Nations Framework Convention on Climate Change and the 1997 Kyoto Protocol, which set binding emission targets only for the developed countries. The focus has reasonably turned to the USA, the GHG emissions champion. The world is expecting that the new American administration has to commit itself to clear binding targets. On the other hand, greenhouse gas emissions from developing countries will likely surpass those from industrialized countries within the first half of this century. While there is a need for developed countries' efforts to reduce the risk of climate change, they seem reluctant to undertake clear targets in fear of sacrificing the pace of their economic growth. Additionally, the issue of securing the financial resources required for the transition to new technology economies poses serious concerns for poor developing countries. In some cases, these countries have engaged themselves in more sustainable patterns of development driven by economic security or environmental concerns. Brazil, for example, while currently exempted from emissions obligation, has been involved in renewable energy production and use and in reducing the rate of deforestation. Dear colleagues, when I initially drafted the report entitled The Road to Copenhagen at the beginning of this year, I was hoping that when the time comes to present it to our second committee at the media, this document would have been overtaken by developments. On March 28 this year, hundreds of millions of people all over the world, including the 11 million of my country, Greece, participated in the WWF's Earth Hour, delivering a very strong message to the world's leaders. The people we represent are really being sensitized and demand from their governments to take part in an international agreement and to undertake the responsibility to fully comply with their commitments. Unfortunately, however, President Obama has yet neither managed to pass a climate change package nor announced any interim targets besides the initially announced 80% cut by year 2050. The negotiation talks with China are indeed going very slowly, and both till now seem unwilling to get committed unless the other part does so. In particular, China's National Development and Reform Commission stated recently on May 20th that the rich nations should cut their GHG emissions by at least 40% by 2020, above 1990 levels, and should also give 0.5 to 1% of their annual economic growth to help other nations laying down its intentions for the Copenhagen Conference. With no remarkable results noticed so far, the questions still remain open for us. To which extent are rich countries willing to contribute in terms of GHG reductions and in terms of funds to be transferred to the developing countries? To which extent are major developing countries such as China and India willing to commit in limiting the growth of their emissions without jeopardizing their economic development? A few days ago, some hundreds of reactors gathered in Bonn for the second of the five UN official negotiating meeting before Copenhagen. The official press release of the United Nations has been distributed to all of you. The talks concluded on the 12th of June with an enlarged negotiating text reflecting mostly individual proposals for action and much less a solid agreement on global action against climate change. The UNFCCC Executive Secretary Ivo de Boer said that, quote, "The session has made clear what governments want to see in Copenhagen Agreement, which shows that they are committed to reaching an agreement, and this is a big achievement," end quote. At this point, one thing is clear to me, and is well reflected in our draft report. Politicians have to speed up and engage themselves in talks, having committed themselves first for concluding with an ambitious agreement in December. I believe that our draft resolution I'm proposing can really describe, first, the challenges regarding climate change as indicated by science, B, the commitments resulting from past agreements, C, the positive steps already taken by the global community, D, the principles that should coach the successor treaty to the Kyoto Protocol, and finally, E, the concrete actions recommended to governments and parliaments of both developed and developing countries. As far as the PAM countries are concerned, the vulnerability of the Mediterranean region to climate change imposes the undertaking of both adaptation and mitigation efforts. Dear colleagues, I'm sure you've carefully read the report and the resolution, and I don't want, neither will have the time for me to go through it, unless some of you have something to add, a new amendment, or last minute new ideas. I want to thank all our colleagues and, of course, all experts still today participating in our meetings of this task force for their contributions and the drafting documents. I do want to give special acknowledgement to France for drafting Latin 3 of the last version of my draft resolution, reflecting the leading role of the science as a pointer to the right direction in terms of objectives that need to be set for tackling climate change. Here I conclude my presentation, asking you to endorse the draft report and the resolution on climate change, and mainly asking you to join us as Greek delegation in the march towards Copenhagen, also physically. I think that beyond those of us who participate in other fora like I do, or those of us who will be chosen by governments for their national delegations, we should make a very massive appearance in Copenhagen, especially at the parliamentary meeting to take place the last 2 or 3 days of Copenhagen. I think, as often mentioned in our meetings, that we all share my belief that it's time for parliamentarians to act and not for governments. I follow, and you definitely all follow, and here let me remind you that it was the parliamentarians' presence in Kyoto that brought down by 3 years the executive decision to set the target for 2015. It was the parliamentarians, the IPU parliamentarians and the GLOBE parliamentarians, that brought it down to 2012. I think we should set, as soon as we know what governments are setting as their target, we should and we can set more optimistic and more daring targets. I'm following all through the last political years, the last 10 political years of my life, that governments are daily trying to curtail powers from parliamentary bodies. We shouldn't allow this to happen for environment. We should not allow this to happen for disaster management. This does not only have to do with the political existence of our party, of our duty, or our will to have more voters approving our political career. This has to do with the future generations that, after all, are our own children. Thank you very much.
شكراً للسيدة بابا ديمترو. لدينا بعض السائلين. كنا نود أن نقفز إلى المصادقة على التقرير والقرار. الأردن ثم اليونان ثم ألجيريا. تركيا.
Excuse me. I forgot something very important that I should. Can I have the floor?
Yes.
I took it. Yes. I had decided to begin by announcing a very wonderful piece of news I learned working in this room. This is that Turkey has already 2 or 3 months ago ratified the Kyoto Protocol. Here I need an applause, and I'm sure that our Turkish delegation has contributed to this evolution. Thank you, Ashton.
اوكي نبدا بالاردن تفضل.
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. شكرا السيد رئيس الجلسه. لا يسعني الا ان اشكر السيده بابا ديمتريو على هذه المعلومات التي قدمتها. وابدا مما عرف علماء السكان البيئه بانها النافذه المجانيه لاستنشاق الهواء النقي لكل البشر. وعليه يجب من هنا من هذا المنبر أن نشكر اليابان التي استجابت لخفض المواد التي تسبب الانبعاث الحراري من 20% إلى 15% عام 2015. ثانيا هناك دول ما زالت تقوم بدفن النفايات السامة في أراضي الدول الفقيرة حتى هذه اللحظة. يعني كانت بداية الدفن سنة 1961 في الصحراء الجزائرية، واستمر الأمر في بلدان أخرى حتى هذه اللحظة. ما موقف جمعيتنا الموقرة من هذه الدول التي ما زالت تتعامل مع الدول النامية على اعتبار أنها ثيرد كلاس مش سكند كلاس؟ شكرا.
اليونان تفضلي.
Merci, Monsieur le Président. J'aimerais évidemment féliciter Madame Papadimitriou pour son excellent rapport, mais aussi Monsieur Junqueiro pour son rapport également sur les catastrophes naturelles. Un rapport pour lequel je suis extrêmement sensible, et j'aimerais, permettez-moi de le rappeler, qu'il est né dans une discussion que nous avons eue à Malte lors d'une réunion de la Commission après justement d'énormes incendies que nous avons eus en Grèce et en particulier dans ma région. J'ai trouvé extrêmement intéressant dans la discussion de ce matin le rapport que Madame Wallström a fait entre les changements climatiques et les catastrophes naturelles. Et c'est justement deux sujets qui sont liés. C'est d'ailleurs un cercle vicieux. Plus les changements climatiques avancent, plus on a des catastrophes naturelles. Et ce dont j'aimerais retenir, c'est donc que, en tant que politicien, désormais, on ne peut plus agir sans tenir compte de l'environnement, sans tenir compte de ce cercle vicieux et sans tenir compte de la protection de l'environnement. Ça, c'est le premier point. Et le deuxième point, c'est pour les deux cas, aussi bien l'environnement que les catastrophes naturelles, on a besoin d'actions communes. On ne peut plus agir, évidemment, c'est très important de prendre des mesures à l'intérieur de chaque pays, mais il est très important de mettre l'accent sur les actions communes. Et je pense que notre rôle en tant que PAM, en tant qu'Assemblée parlementaire, c'est justement de mettre l'accent sur cette collaboration, sur ces actions communes dont on devrait se faire promoteur. Merci.
الجزائر تفضل.
مسيو البريزيدون، كلماتي في الحقيقة ستكون تعليق وتعليق سياسي. بسم الله والحمد لله. زميلاتي زملائي نواب الجمعية، السلام عليكم وتحية أخوية متوسطية. في البداية أود أن أتمم ما جاءت به السيدة أليزا بابا دميتريو، وعلى هذا الجهد العظيم الذي بذلته، وعلى هذا التحليل العلمي والمهني، سواء من حيث تلاوة الأحداث ومفهوم التعهدات والاتفاقيات حول البيئة أو التبادلات المناخية وأسبابها وعوامل تزايدها ونتائجها المأساوية على الكون كله وعلى الحياة الإنسانية وديمومتها وعلى آفاق ومستقبل الأجيال القادمة. سيدتي، إننا نسعى جميعا في متوسطنا إلى أمن وسلام، وبالتالي إلى بيئة نظيفة ومناخ معتدل ومستقبل خالي أو محدود من أزمات الطبيعة والتقلبات المناخية. إن بلدي وهو من البلدان النامية، ونسبة الغاز المنبعث منه في الحقيقة ضئيلة جدا، لكنه عانى العديد من الأزمات الطبيعية كزلزال الأصنام أي الشلف الذي ذهب ضحيته حوالي 30,000، وهذا في سنة 1985، وزلزال ضواحي العاصمة سنة 2001 والذي ذهب ضحيته حوالي 5,000 نسمة، وتهديم وتحطيم البيئة التحتية والسكنية لتلك المناطق، ناهيك عن الفيضانات المتتالية كفيضانات باب الواد بالعاصمة وجنوب البلاد، والجفاف الفاحم في الهضام وفي السهول. سيدتي، ما يلاحظ وما يجب تحديده، وهذا رب تدخلي، هو تحديد المسؤوليات ثم الواجبات، وبعدها التعاون الكف بين الدول المصنعة أو المتقدمة باعثة هذا التلوث والدول النامية المستقبلة له. سيدتي، إننا نطلب تحفيز الجميع على الذهاب إلى كوبنهاغن والاتفاق على منحى جديد يعمل على حفظ البيئة والتقليل من مأساة السعود. السلام.
أن الأسئلة انتهت أو الزملاء انتهوا. الجزائر تريد الحديث؟ تفضل.
شكرا سيد الرئيس. Je tiens à féliciter et additionnellement mon collègue d'Algérie par son intervention qui a été d'un ordre très important. Je tiens à féliciter Madame Papandriou pour le rapport qui a été élaboré, pour lui dire que le changement climatique est la précoce préoccupation de tout le monde. Et comme vous n'ignorez pas sans doute, la communauté internationale accorde aujourd'hui de plus en plus d'importance au phénomène de réchauffement climatique. Et ce que de plus en plus des pays prennent des mesures de réduction de gaz à effet de serre, GES, qui n'impose aux opérateurs concernés en application des conventions cadres des Nations Unies sur les changements climatiques et du protocole de Kyoto adopté en 1997. Ce préambule que j'adhère à votre rapport et poser une question ou bien un questionnement concernant la résolution. Dans le cadre de exprimant l'inquiétude de l'APM à propos de l'augmentation depuis de 2 degrés Celsius de la température mondiale prédit par les scientifiques. Il est utile de substituer ce mot prédit, ça n'a été d'aucune occasion une prévision, mais analyser et étudier. Analyser et étudier. Et comme vous l'avez dit, la France, dans le cadre 3, qui demande au gouvernement du pays de l'APM à souscrire à l'objectif défini par la communauté scientifique internationale et consistant à limiter à 2 degrés de température Celsius, mais à réduire le taux de 2 degrés, à réduire et non à limiter. Parce que certains pays risquent de se voir humiliés devant cette assise de température. Et merci.
شكراً. أطلب من السيدة بابا ديمترو أن
yes.
تجيب على الأسئلة.
Thank you for your comments, most valuable. For the second or first speaker, I quite agree that you know we all breathe the same air, and this air belongs to us all. But so does the impact of unsustainable practices about the air and everything else, even when this is provoked by a very small focal point in a small developed or developing country. We have to understand the scale of the provocation of the harm and the excessiveness of the impact. It was mentioned by Algeria, peace was mentioned most rightfully. And I want to add, fully agreeing, that peace is the best parallel game, the best parallel game, what we gain globally when applying good, fair, and allow me to say democratic policies for environmental protection. Look at what's happening in the Middle East. I mean, even though the worsening of the political situation, the common research on water goes on in safe basements near the Jerusalem area. This is a hopeful image. You also asked my Algerian friends, who is responsible for what, and we should address this question. I think this question has been asked for years, and it's a very difficult question to be answered, because we all did not have the same beginning line. And there are countries who do not want to adapt our policies after very, very many years of our contributing to the worsening of the environment. So it doesn't really matter, I think, to try to find the culpable, who is guilty. I was amazed in Johannesburg to hear the global union of judges who made a very good point of their appearance, but criticizing everybody, you know, I mean, naming everybody guilty, they came up with an amazing, shocking, I should say, proposal to have the judges within each judicial system, within each country, or within countries' unions, like the European Union or the African Union, allow judges and their unions to lead and to set the rules for environmental upgrading, which to me is an equivalent of the, not of the loss of power of politicians, but of their not necessity within the system. and I don't accept it as absurd. I agree more with Mrs. Kanellopoulos in answering who is responsible. I agree with her answer of just noting that it is a vicious circle. So let's cut, you know, the Greek old Alexander's way, the rope of evil, and start from every point of this vicious circle by upgrading everything that falls in our own domain. As Rousseau has once said, let's each cultivate his own garden first, and then we'll find a way. The last question of Morocco was?
Algeria.
The last question. You asked me in the report to be stronger in expressing our concern. I mean, the second paragraph of our resolution, I read it, reads, expressing its serious concern about the rise of the world temperature above 2 degrees Celsius projected by scientists, if no measures are taken today. I think this is very well mentioned. If you want it stronger, please give me an amendment and I will put it to people's consideration. I thank you.
Merci, madame. La seule modification qu'on peut écrire d'une façon classique, c'est d'enlever le mot prédit. Parce que dans le mot prédit, il y a une prévision à faire et seul tout ce qui est haut peut le faire. Mais analyser et étudier par les scientifiques, parce qu'il y a des études qui sont contraignantes, des études qui disent qu'il y a une élévation, un réchauffement, et des études, autres études, qui rabaissent la température. Donc analyser et étudier, c'est plus préférable que prédit. Et dans le contexte de la rédaction du groupe français, limiter et plutôt réduire la température de 2 degrés.
Dear colleague, in the first report, last year's report, long report, we all signed, we all voted for it, we had very much accumulated scientific evidence exactly of the very field you are suggesting. I personally thought that this should not go on a short resolution that whose purpose is to agitate parliamentarians and government. It's not to give scientific data. There are all the documents, the background documents, that will go, and who wants to read them. But the first report we did last year had a long, long, long reference to scientific data.
شكرا السيدة أليسا بابا ديمترو على جهدها الطيب وشكرا لمداخلات الزملاء من وفود الدول المحترمة. نعم التقرير هو الأصل وهو القاعدة في أي بحث ننظر فيه سواء من اللجان أو مجموعات العمل الخاصة أو اللجان الفرعية، والقرار هو زبدة الحديث في هذا الموضوع، لكن الملاحظات بالتالي تغني أي مسودة قرار حتى نتبناها ونقفز إلى فقرة أخرى في برنامج عملنا. فأقترح على الأخوة الزملاء والزميلات تبني والمصادقة على التقرير والقرار حتى ننتقل إلى موضوع المياه. فهل نوافق على الهدوء يعني الموافقة؟ شكرا. تمت المصادقة على القرار وشكرا ثانية للسيدة أليسا. الآن نتحدث عن موضوع المياه. Do you have anything? Now?
We have the lunch and the photo. It's already 1:20.
So shall I quickly? أعتذر لن نقدم موضوع المياه الآن سنقدمه بعد استراحة الغداء حيث أن سعادة رئيس مجلس النواب البرتغالي ينتظرنا لأخذ صورة عائلية كما سموها لمجموعة الوفود المحترمة فلنغادر إلى بدلالة الإخوة البرتغاليين إلى الطابق الأرضي لأخذ الصورة وتناول الغداء ثم نعود بعدها إلى القاعة. سنعود في الساعة الرابعة تماما إذا سمحتم أيها الزملاء والزميلات الساعة الرابعة شكرا. We will come back at 4 o'clock.